Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 3rd, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We were reading in Romans. I think this is the left. This is the last chapter in Romans. So we're picking up chapter 16. All right, we're reading in the book of Romans. We're in chapter 16. I'm going to skip verses 1 through 16. It's full of salutations, a lot of the names I have problems pronouncing. But we'll just pick up in verse 17, where we read, "Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause division and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. For your obedience is come abroad unto all men. I am glad therefore on your behalf, but yet I would have you wise unto that which is good and simple concerning evil. And the God of peace shall bruise Satan under your feet shortly. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you all. Amen. Timotheus, my fellow worker, and Lucas, and Jason, and Sophata, my kinsmen, salute you. I, Theotus, who wrote this epistle, salute you in the Lord. Gaius, mine host, and of the whole church, salute you. Arrestus, the chamberlain of the city, salute you. And Quartus, a brother. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you all. Amen. Now to him that is of the power to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery which was kept secret since the world began, but now is made manifest, and by the scriptures of the prophets, according to the commandments of the everlasting God, make known to all nations for the obedience of faith. To God only wise be glory through Jesus Christ forever. Amen." And that is the end of the book of Romans. Okay, I guess we're first just, let me just talk about a few things. I guess I do have a few announcements. I don't know, do we have any other announcements other than what I have to announce tonight? Terry, I don't know if Jan's on yet. Nope, Jan's not here tonight. But anyway, let me make a few announcements here. A couple of things. We're still looking for anybody who's paralegal. We can surely use help if anybody has legal knowledge. And also, we're looking for people who can help us with PowerPoints and videos and YouTube and, kind of putting all that stuff together. And actually, of course, we do need volunteers for lots of things we're doing. So if people have experience in certain areas that might be helpful, that's great. And if not, people can help and we can teach each other and work through different things to get things done. We've got a lot of committees going on and a lot of people working behind the scenes. We need more. We need a lot of state leaders. I'm not sure. I think we still need some district leaders. We'll find that out in a few minutes. But we always need more district leaders. We have 10 districts. We've broken the nation up into 10 districts. And we broke them up according to time zones. And so anybody who would like to work as a district leader to assist us in organizing the nation, certainly use your help. All district leaders should be involved in their counties also. Everybody, every member should be involved in their own counties. Every member should be a county organizer and starting to prepare organizing people in the county so that we can take back our government and have government by consent again, but only if the people step up and educate themselves, learn what needs to be done, and do it. But organizing, of course, at this point is kind of key to get people activated and acting ultimately down in a county level. The purpose of the 10 district leaders is to work with state coordinators and organize with them and assist them in any way we can. And the state leaders, we can use more than one in each state, of course, is to work to try to find leadership, lead people who are interested in taking leadership roles within their counties and starting to organize in order to start to rebuild our militia, working to create administrations for the juries in every county court. Ultimately, shall I say, really, it's in the state court within each county. So we need people to work. And by the way, that is a paid position, or will be once we take back control of our government. So anybody interested in that, you know, you can go on to nationallibertyalliance.org, and there's places you can, let me see, you could sign right up here. Well, you can sign up on your, if you go to your My Account, and I believe in My Account you can check boxes in order to make yourself available to be an administrator within your county. Under the grand jury tab, should find some information to assist us, assist in that, to become a grand jury administrator here on this page. I believe this page is completed. I don't know, I think we have to update this page, but anyway, this page does give some information concerning becoming a grand jury administrator. We also have the vow that anybody who takes these positions should be taken. Ultimately, and let's see what else we have here. I guess that's it. We're going to be posting, we did finish up on our handbooks. We're just going to review one more time, I think. We'll pass to a few of the people involved the handbooks, which would be a grand jury handbook. Also a handbook for the petit jury. We did finish the administrator's handbook, which we're going to finalize probably tomorrow as far as any last thoughts or ideas to go into that. And then we'll be posting them. I think they'll all be posted probably by next Monday. They'll be posted probably underneath the grand jury right now. I think that's where we'll post them. So we also have the sheriff. Well, we have the sheriff's handbook. We have administrator and administrator, sheriff, and coroner's handbook. We also, as I mentioned, we have the petit jury and the grand jury. So all those books will be up there. The sheriff's handbook is available right now. It's been up there actually for a while. Good. Anybody really wants to dig a little deep into, you can click on power of the county sheriff underneath the grand jury. And this is a page that when sheriffs enter our website, that they would be entering in on this page. And you can download a copy of the sheriff's handbook. Now, this handbook, I think we've updated it. I'm going to review through that this week, and I'm sure we'll probably do some updates on it. But there is one available right now if anybody would like to look at it. Check back in a week or two, and we'll see if this one has been updated. Got some videos here on, well, this one video on the sheriffs and some introductory information. Got a lot of stuff on Sheriff Mac. And I think some other sheriffs down a little further. Yep. So anyway, we got a lot of things up on our website. We do need a lot of volunteers. We need people involved. Only the people can save America. People have to step up and educate themselves and take control. At some time in the near future, we do perceive we're going to be working on books for school, for children, to introduce them to their heritage, and they should be learning something every year
for their 12 years or in school, or more in some cases, but they should be learning something every year. By the time they come out of high school, at the end of their at least fundamental education, their basic education, they should know everything they need to know as people to govern themselves. But unfortunately, schools spend a lot of time educating our children to become Marxists. Anybody paying attention to what's going on in these public schools, making a visit and looking at your kids' work or your grandkids' work, you'll find out that they are being well-trained Marxists. That's why we have so many of these college kids and stuff totally lost, haven't got a clue what's going on, and they're out there, you know, marching for things they don't even know what they're talking about. Now, I'm not talking about the rioters or anything. Those seem to be a select group of individual, well-trained Marxists that were working with the intent to take down this nation. All right, anyway, again, volunteers as much as possible. Definitely need as many people as possible to start working, and everybody should be get educated. Terry, do we have any questions or any other announcements?
Yeah, I thought Jan was going to be on. Hold on a second. I thought Jan was going to be on, and he was going to have the questions. I think we had a little bit. Maybe he can't get on right now, and there are several questions, yes.
Okay, so we're going to skip them, or what are we going to do, pick them back up next week?
We can do that if you want. I'm trying to help Brent get on properly at the moment.
All right. Well, Brent's on right now, isn't he? We'll move over to him.
I don't know. I have a check. I don't know that he's ready to move over.
Well, I did see him on the list. I don't see him on the front page anymore, but he was there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Brent, if you can hear us, get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue. And we'll try to keep him unmuted. I don't know, once we move on to the next person, we should be able to unmute him anyway and keep him unmuted, and he can mute himself on his computer.
So, okay. So, okay, let's delay questions then for now.
Okay. All right. Well, Jan's on right now. Yeah, it looks like he just came in. He's only in a couple of minutes.
Okay, Jan's got it then. He's better than I am at this.
And Brent, hit star 6 to get into the queue, so we'll pull you forward here and you know, give you the mic in a short while. Jan? Maybe he's still preparing himself. He's only been in a couple of minutes. All right. Francine, do we have any new people working in the districts? And if so, and if not, where do we need help?
We need help in, Galen needs help in the east, in the eastern region. He is region number 9. And that is the states of Pennsylvania, New York, Delaware, New Jersey, Maryland, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. I think I got them all. Okay. So we definitely need help in the east. That's a lot of states, a lot of real estate to cover. And we also need help in the Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Dakotas area, right? Mac in the middle of the states.
So, and that's area number 6.
Number 5.
Arkansas. Oh, 5. Oh, okay. I'm looking at the wrong way. Okay, 5. Right, and you know, we broke these things up in time zones. You know, we've got Eastern time zone, we've got Central, we have Mountain, and we have the West Coast. But, you know, people don't have to work within the time zone if they want to put some time into assist. But we do need numerous people in all of these sections, in all 10 districts, you know, to work with the state coordinators. And state coordinators, again, you know, the whole focus is really to get the stimulation down into the county level and get people organizing themselves and having maybe a monthly meeting. And again, as I mentioned a little while ago, rebuilding the militia, creating a relationship with the local sheriff, and working on administrations for the juries, jury administrations, and also the committeeman process. Very important to take the committeeman process back so that we can discover, you know, who we want on the ballot. We need to be able to get rid of these people that violate their oaths. And I'm kind of sick and tired of Congress. I've been listening in on them for many years now, and particularly lately, it's more disturbing than ever. You know, they do nothing. I know I was watching the fact-finding meeting or mission or whatever they want to call it, I don't know, hearing with Barr, but they certainly weren't interested in any facts. They didn't even let the guy speak. They were just interested in giving their five-minute speech and grabbing back their time and chastising him. And what a waste of time. It's an insult to the American people, and it really is an insult. We need to get rid of these people. And guess what? If we control the committeeman process, which we should, you know, we need committeemen in every single election district. You know, in my county, for instance, we have 249 election districts. So, you know, we got 249 seats to fill. But we only need one person per county. Actually, let me boil it all the way down. With five people in the state becoming committeemen takes over the entire state, because the elected committeemen will then be in control in appointing other committeemen and over time teaching them to become elected committeemen, of course. But we would take control of all of the committeemen that have been appointed. We'd be able to train them, teach them into the Constitution, do a lot of things, and return to the people the job that they should have had and we should have had for quite some time, and that is deciding who our leaders should be, you know, who we want to put on the ballot, because it's the committeeman who decides who gets on the ballot. You don't get on the ballot unless you go through the committeemen. Now, there are a few exceptions to that, of course. There are, you know, certain individuals that don't need to get that many signatures, and they can achieve it on their own. It's pretty difficult to get on the ballot without the assistance of the committeeman. And the committeeman is the boss, and they know it. That's why the parties are so strong. You see, the parties control the elected individuals that are in Congress. And ultimately, they control everything within their state and also on a national level from within their election districts, from within their states. They're the ones that decide who's going to get onto the ballots. They're the one who decides who they're going to walk for to get them onto the ballot. And so they give us the choice of the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. And that's the way it's been for a long, long time. As long as I've been conscious, and I'm sure it goes back way further, probably before I was born, they've taken over this whole system. So there are no elected committeemen. So five elected committeemen, and that's men and women. You know, it doesn't have to be just men. Anybody can over 18, you can become a committeeman. But to become a committeeman, you really need to take our courses. Our government by consent course particularly, and also our civics course. Those two courses are extremely important to understand where we're at, how we got here, number one, in our civics course, and get a good glimpse of our American history. We've got Thomas Woods in our civics course. I believe we got 19 lectures by him. I think we have that many. We've got quite a few. And he's very, very fascinating and interesting individual. So the committeemen, five people can take back a state and take control and then require everyone that goes through those election districts within your state, requiring them to be knowledgeable of the Constitution. And we need to quiz them on the Constitution. And if they fail in the knowledge of the Constitution, then we need to send them on their way and would send them to National Liberty Alliance to learn about it if they really want to get elected. And they need to understand we're looking for statesmen, we're not looking for politicians. I do believe, and I'm trying to think if I wrote a paper on this or not. I might have. I've got to go searching around. If I haven't, I will. I know I've written a few paragraphs on it. We can get rid of politics. We need to get to the political process. If we can execute and exercise the Constitution requiring these people to be obedient and focused and remain within their jurisdictions that we have given them authority to act in, then we definitely could take control of these people and require that they do the will of the people, and we'd get rid of politicians. So the key thing is, you know, we want to get involved in the politics without the in the political process without the politics. So, we want to get as many people as possible to volunteer to really build all the way down into the counties. Jan, are you ready yet? Is Jan with us?
He's having a tough time getting situated.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll take. Are there any? Let's see. Francine, do you know if there's anything else that needs to be raised this evening before we get moving?
Not that I'm aware of. I did send you a Skype that you probably need to read. So other than that, no.
Okay. That meeting we spoke about earlier, that's on Wednesday at 3 o'clock?
Correct.
Okay, and tomorrow we're going to meet. You know what? Why don't we just meet Wednesday at 3 o'clock, and after that meeting we'll have a quick breeze through, because I don't think we are going to have much to discuss on the other items that we need to look at, and we'll pass around the final papers on our, books, handbooks that I just mentioned before, for the final, conclusion on that.
Right.
Not that we can't add in the future and... if we need any corrections to be made, someone finds something, of course, we can quickly take care of it. Right now, these handbooks are only in PDF availability, so people will be able to download them in PDFs. I'm going to be working something out in the near future. I'm working on trying to get my book published right now, so that's taking a little time. I spoke with one publisher. The quickest I can get it to market is 90 days. So that brings us into September, isn't it? Let's see. We're in August, September, October. Brings us into October. And if we go that route, that's one way to go. If I don't go that route, and I'm also seeking out other agents for different, that will approach different publishers if they like your book. They push it through for us to the publishers. So I'm working on that too. It seems, they're as hungry as we or I am to get this book out. They're as hungry to get books and get things going also. And we can take advantage of that and probably press it even quicker. This book, I like to get this book to market as quick as possible. But once the book is out there, we're going to start a campaign working through each state and to really try to get a copy of this book into the hands of every sheriff, because it covers everything, A to Z. And by the time they get through the book, they'll have a real good flavor for what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, and they will start using our resources with their deputies to train their deputies in common law. And hopefully they'll go out and buy the book also. The other choice I have, of course, is printing the book, which people call self-publishing. I definitely would have to hire an editor either way, and that's not too bad. That's like about $1,600, $2,000, somewhere around there, to get an editor. They charge, I think it's 1 to 3 cents per word, okay? And I did run through the counting of the way. I think it was 331,000 words or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was. But, a couple of $1,000 at most to get an editor. And I think that's very important to get the book edited by a professional. And then I can take it up. If I have to go the route of taking it up to Amazon and self-publishing it, where they print the books as they're ordered, then that's what I'll do, because that'll get it into the hands of people quicker. Maybe I'll even do it both ways. If I can get a publisher, maybe I'll work with printing them off or through Amazon and work through a publisher also, which will then eventually get it into the bookstores and out more into the opening. But anyway, with that in the mind and with that in view, I'm going to work on printing up these handbooks and making them available for people to purchase up on Amazon. Once we get them printed up, we'll put the links onto this website and people can order the handbooks if they want. Or they can download them for free in PDF form and, have all that information. But I'd like to get handbooks because it's very convenient to be able to have a handbook and you can stick it in your shirt pocket or your pocketbook or something or whatever. So that's something I'm going to be working on and trying to get out as quick as possible. But, Okay, last call for Jan before we move on. Jan, are you up and running?
He's up and running and...
Five, four,
but he
three,
can't talk yet.
Two, no, okay. All right, anyway, we're going to move on. Is Brent here? I don't see him in the queue yet. Brent, hit a star six to get into the queue, and we'll unmute you.
Gerard is here also. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I see Gerard's here.
Yeah, and Jan, I think, is reloading the app right now. He'll be along in a few minutes.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get Brent up and going, though. Brent?
I am working with Brent right now.
All right, well, have him just come on, and, you can work out the hosting for next week.
Okay.
You may confuse him too much with the hosting right now anyway, because you're going to want to go through a few things.
Right.
You know, we're going to be meeting, we're having a meeting on Wednesday at 3 p.m., get into the room a little early and work things out with Brent if he's available then before that meeting. And then he'll be hostability by next Monday.
Yes.
A word I just coined. Okay. I don't know where to go with it at this point. Not seeing Brent. Gerard, you're about ready to take the board when I move over to Brent?
Can you hear me?
Unfortunately.
I'm having trouble getting into the controls, so just give me a minute and I'll...
Yeah. Well,
I'm not in the controls.
Okay, get into the control room.
I'm trying. Okay.
All right. I don't think if there's anything else. Yeah, go ahead.
John, so you know, Brent is on Skype and he says he cannot hear the program and he cannot speak. So I don't think you're going to hear from Mr. Winters tonight.
Well, that's because he's muted. And let's see if we can find him.
He can see your screen. He said he's calling in on Skype, and he can see your screen, but he can't hear. So I go ahead and unmute him and see if that works.
Well, I'm looking for him. I don't see him.
Oh.
Well, if he can't, he can't hear us?
That's what he Skyped to me.
Okay, all right. Well, look, if Brent gets activated before the call is over, we'll give him some time on the mic. And I guess we'll open up for questions. Gerard, are you ready to take the controls? I'll start working on questions right now, and we'll see how things go in a little while with Brent. So while I'm waiting for you, let me know. I'm going to take our first caller. We have a wireless caller. Yes.
I think I finally got a way to work around. At least I can ask one question or two if you want.
Okay, yep. Ask a couple of questions.
As the NLA is striving to develop a representation in the county committee person offices, A, how will the NLA be different than the committee persons who have been gaining elected positions through the Convention of States movement? And then second question is, who is the better movement to follow under, or is there a difference?
Well, look, it's a facade. The committee man process is a facade right now. It's like the Federal Reserve, and which is neither federal nor has any reserves. Well, the committee men, the lights are on and nobody's home. They are ruled over by the elite, ultimately. Each state, there are five individuals, and probably more than that in most states, but at least five individuals that are the state chair. They call themselves the state chair. Usually they have 60, for instance, New York has 62 counties, so we would have 62 state chairs, one person from each county. But they don't necessarily work it that way. And so I don't know how many people they have in their committees. We also discovered that that people who are working in what's that called for the elections? Each county has a Gerard, help me out. What do they call that? What can I think of that? Well, you go down and you register to vote and all that other stuff. Every county has a place. You have the Republicans and the Democrats there. You go get your walk-in lists. Are you hearing me? I hear kids in the background, so it must be you, no?
Yeah, what was your question? A precinct? What do you want to know?
No. I for some reason, I can't think of the name of the... each county has a place where you go to see, get your walk-in list. Board of Elections. There you go. Okay. You have a state Board of Elections, which usually is in the capital. It's like runs all of them, and each county has a Board of Elections. Okay? And trying to remember why I was going there, talking about the Board of Elections. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, what we have discovered is that the people who are state committeemen, they call themselves state committeemen, and they claim to be elected to that position of state committeemen when they're actually appointed, and they create a facade, a fake election process. It's really not an election process at all. It's not lawful. And ultimately, they're ultimately elected by one individual who runs the whole state, or five, a group of five individuals. But we found that the people working in those Board of Election buildings in these counties, that they are taking the positions on the state level. And, that I think, well, there's no doubt about it being a conflict of interest because they owe their job also to the same people who control the whole political process. So they're kind of captured. But here's the thing. There's not one elected committeeman in the entire state of New York, with the exception of the people that we have taught to run for committeemen, but we're unable to take control because the courts are corrupt and we can't get a fair hearing in a court to lay out a case to show that these people are unelected and that we were elected and that we need to take the power and the authority according to law. So that's why we entered into the court system, by the way. We started doing lawsuits and stuff. To sue to get that power back to the people. And we started that over 10 years ago. And, of course, we fell into U.S. versus Williams, and we learned about the grand jury, and we saw the power and authority in that. We realized that over time that we had to take back the federal courts in order to take back the state courts. So that's where we're at. We're in court right now trying to take the federal courts over, and we're head-to-head right now with the United States Supreme Court, who just remains silent. They think that they don't have to answer the people. They think that they're above the law, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, that's where the battle is. Once we win the federal level, then we can go into the federal courts to win back the control in every state. And we could do that with one court case because it's the same thing in every state. And then the elected committeemen will be acknowledged. Meanwhile, we need to be learning to become committeemen and run for committeemen. Committeemen, you run for committeemen. Some states, they do some of it a little early on, but the primaries. But basically, we'll be running in the beginning of the year, so probably January, February, March. I know here in New York it's like April or June. Between April and June that we run for committeemen, and different states have different times that they run. So we need to prepare now. We need to start taking these positions, get elected. We can get elected. We can get ourselves onto the ballot, which we won't need to because there'll be no one to run against. So the state constitutions generally say they're deemed elected if there's nobody running against you, so you're deemed elected. And that would probably be true in any case, in any runoff on an election. If no one's running against you, you can win on your one vote, and you're in. But in any event, we need to take that back. Once we can establish five committee men in every state, bare minimum, we would like many, many dozens or hundreds, as many as possible in a state. But five committee men elected can take control at the state level because they become the state committee, and they can continue the appointing of all the people, take control, lead them, all of the individuals that are in there that don't really know what's going on. They're in, a lot of people are in there because they want to do something, you know, and they're involved in the political process to some degree. A lot of them get frustrated and leave after a couple of years when they discover it's all just a sham. They really don't vote for nothing. But we need to take control of that and put the proper people onto the ballots, people who are going to represent the people and not continue to represent, the deep state or the New World Order or themselves. As a matter of fact, they all kind of get some criminal activity going on in there, a lot of money flow, contracts. I mean, it's unbelievable in my county, the people who were on it, people who are running the state committee here in New York, the county committee here in New York, in my county, were a group of lawyers. They were running, they're all sitting down in the chairs on the county committees. I don't know if any of them were on the state level, but it's a while ago. But these are the kind of people that are running the show on us. People who get in, get connected, they're kind of brought over to the other side in the sense of criminal activities. They get deals going on and they get contracts. Maybe they run a towing company and they get the contracts on the highways to pick up cars, or they get different contracts that are available that they can get deals going on and kind of get that, those positions that are bid out and so on. So anyway, we need to take that back. We need to start pursuing that now. We need to organize on our county level. So everybody needs to get active. Okay. Jan?
Yeah, there's some more here. This one is taken from last week's call, and it focuses on a section where apparently she didn't hear what you said. It says, "We must maintain the jurisdiction of law, and judges are not permitted to make any summary decisions. They're going to try to rest in a code that was written concerning particularly online activities where," and she missed out for a while, and then it went to, "We'll probably talk a little bit about that maybe next week after we file the paper, and we'll look at the paper a little bit." Does that ring a bell, what you were talking about?
Not really. I know we were talking a little bit about, read the first part of that again.
"We must maintain the jurisdiction of law, and judges are not permitted to make any summary
decisions." Okay, that's what's ringing a bell, the summary decisions. Just briefly talk a little bit about that. Summary decisions are not appropriate or available or lawful in a court of record, with very few exceptions. Okay, you can get a summary decision if the other side defaults, of course. If the other side responds but doesn't answer all of the questions and the statements in your affidavit, so whatever they fail to answer is deemed as a fact. And if you can collectively look at all those facts and make the case that case is over, they've acquiesced, they've agreed, to the things that they didn't answer. If you can create your case and prove that, by laying out the facts, then again you can demand a summary judgment for that. But other than that, summary judgments, they're not available in common law courts. Ultimately, it's the people that decide. We're going to be going to court. We've got two federal cases coming up here in New York. We'd like to get as many people as possible in them. One is an IRS case, and the other one is the YouTube case. And so when those two cases come up, we'll alert the people with as much time as soon as we know. We're going to let everybody know, and we'll be pounding it for every week until the date comes that we're going to go. It'll be in Southern District, New York, in Westchester County, not down in New York City, Westchester County. So it's north of New York City. And so we want to get as many people as possible to go there. Now, I know they're going to try to, you know, pull some summary judgments there. They're going to try to pull in their civil law rules. They're going to try to throw us out on their Rule 12. There's numerous things that they're going to try, and we're going to debate and argue that point and to demand the jurisdiction we asked for. Because let's take YouTube, for instance. Just briefly, you know, YouTube is going to rely on 47 U.S.C. subsection 230, which is what gives them power and authority to be able to block or remove anything that is inappropriate. But when you really work through the language here, you discover really it's usually focuses in on, inappropriate things in a sexual way. Anything that is, how would I say, what's the word I'm looking for here? When you read through, it's very clear. It talks about sexual problems or sexual situations, anything inappropriate in that level, or extremely violent, you know. You can't get rid of things that may be violent and not show them on YouTube, for instance. Like, let's take what's going on in the cities across America. There's a lot of violence going on. They can't shut you down, or they should not. They don't have the power or the authority to shut you down because you're reporting the news, okay? And in this section 230, it's very clear that they're supposed to make available to parents all of the controls that they have that the parents can set for their children to prevent them to see things like that, for instance. They don't want them to see those things until a certain age, which makes sense, of course. But when it comes to anything else, they don't have the power or the authority to block or remove those items. I just was reading today, and didn't finish going through it, the executive order from Trump concerning censorship by YouTube and Google and all the others. They've drawn a lot of the same conclusions that we've already drawn. And I'm going to use that in the court, of course. But that's going to be some of the positions they're going to be moving in on. But you see, the people have lost their common sense. People aren't sure. Things don't seem to be clear to them, because we've been beat up and bombarded all our lives with these political correct things and a different focus of morality or lack of morality and just a whole different array of things and turning logic upside down. Look what they're doing in Congress. They've turned logic upside down. And a lot of people are still falling for that. They can't discern, common sense anymore, it seems, because they really hurt or destroyed, the people. They're confused, and they don't know the difference between law and civil law. And they don't understand, common sense, which really is what is relied on for the rules of common law, which is maxims, truths that cannot be denied, So if we bring the obvious ones up front first, people will start to see it and hopefully redevelop their common sense because a lot of people have lost it. But we got to get that back. But going back into that point it is not for the judge to decide to throw us out under 47 USC, which, by the way, Trump's paper, as I mentioned, they came to a lot of conclusions we've come to, so we're going to insert that paper into the court, and we're going to bring some of those issues up when we have that hearing. First of all, we're going to want to know what this hearing is all about, because they don't have the authority to go forward with this hearing, because this is not a court of record. I mean, this is a court of record. It's not a court of a jurisdiction of civil law. Their procedures are quite different. You know, they're going to really try to work us out on that particular case of 47 U.S.C. It's not for the judge to make that decision, because the jury decides the facts and the law. And he can't remove that that opportunity for them to make that decision from them by deciding in the beginning of the case and thereby using it to throw us out. So this is going to be a battle. I think we'll be able to build a good battle on paper, and we're going to make it clear to the judge, not directly, we'll signal him, so to speak, or her, to let it be known we don't go to appellate courts. This is a court of record. We're not going to an appellate court. We will sue that court directly. And we do have a history of that, so when we signal them, I think they'll get the message. But we'll see what happens, you know. We'll see how it goes. It will be an uphill battle. And that'll be the, in both cases, we'll have that kind of a problem.
Next.
I guess we'll take one more, because it's getting late, and I want to move over to Brent. Okay. If Brent, it looks like Brent's in now.
In Florida. Can you hear me, John?
Yep.
I was picked up and arrested for practicing law without a license, which is bogus in and of itself, for helping a fellow American type up some paperwork that she filed in state court. The sheriff's deputies refused to show me the warrant when asked during the arrest. I went on the clerk of court website to look at the warrant, and lo and behold, it was not signed by any judge. I then went to arraignment. I challenged jurisdiction.
Did he say he talked to the sheriff?
No. He went to the clerk of court.
He didn't go. I thought you said sheriff.
The sheriff deputies refused to show him the warrant when he was arrested.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you talked to the sheriff outside of that. Okay. And when he mentioned the unsigned warrant to the judge, who openly said he didn't know about the warrant, even though his name is printed at the top of it, I told him and showed him that under Florida Constitution, the warrant must be signed. He gave no response. I later found out that at least several other people have the same issue. They were arrested with unsigned warrants. My question is, whom do I report this to? I moved the case to federal court for cause, and the federal court remanded it back to state court, claiming they have no jurisdiction to hear the case in federal court. Who do we bring this gross violation to?
The problem is the federal court absolutely has jurisdiction in this matter. The problem is they didn't couch their paperwork writing correctly in a way that, it's going in for, you move it to federal court, you got to move it for cause, okay? And in this case, due process is the problem that's being violated. And you could probably find other things too, but right off the bat, that's the top thing, due process. If you don't write your papers right, they don't see it. They just cast it right out. And even if they kind of do see it, but it's not clear, they'll throw it out anyway, because they don't want to hear these cases. But if you do write papers correctly, they do have to hear it.
Well, technically, that paper should have only said that they arrested him with a warrant without a judge's signature on it. End of story. He shouldn't have talked anything about it.
Yeah.
That's right. He should. If he talked about the other case that he was arrested for, writing papers up or something, that's not the issue. The issue is...
Yeah, but that also is a federal issue also, because it's the next friend, which is a federal code that applies knowledge of next friend. Not that we need that, but they need that to know that we, to acknowledge us, that the people have a right to come in and represent themselves and others.
But if he gets out of the arrest, he gets out of all the trouble. The rest, he can fight the other thing any time, but the fact that they arrested him with no warrant, they got to let them go. I mean, that's...
Well, yeah, I would sue, of course.
Yeah, that's false arrest, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Look, the clear thing is that paperwork. What I would do is I'd take the paperwork and I'd go down and make an appointment with the sheriff. And you need to collect all the information necessary to show the sheriff that this is required. A court case cannot go forward. An arrest or a warrant cannot go forward unless it's signed by a judge, okay? And that is an affidavit. You know, it's a sworn statement. But the judge will work off sworn statements, of course, and then, of course, now he is exercising the warrant. So without that, it can't go forward. And the sheriff needs to know this.
It sounds like you got a problem with the sheriff in the first place.
Yeah.
Why when the deputies when he asks the deputies to show the warrant and they don't show it, and then he looks it up and it's not signed, somebody knows what's going on. Certainly the sheriff should.
Yeah, and here's the problem, though. If the individual that's asking these questions hasn't educated themselves well enough to defend them, you'll never get a lawyer to defend you on this. And even a lawyer that might be a good lawyer that would like to defend you, he can't defend you because they'll beat him up and they'll find him in contempt and everything. The people have to do this. But you have to be able to navigate yourself through the system, understand how things go, get the right wordings, keep it short and sweet, focused, make sure you got your sworn statements and it covers everything necessary, and press it through, and be bold. If you can't be bold, you're not going to win. You're not going to get anywhere. You got to really push your paperwork through and push your points through. We have crooked judges. We have crooked sheriffs. We've got a lot of bad people. But I would let the sheriff know if he didn't acknowledge when you show him the law. And again, you have to know the law yourself, and we have everything you need on the website. Go through our memorandums. You'll find something in there. Go through our case itself. It's under the grand jury, or go through action against the judiciary. We have lots of memorandums and different things in there. And you should be taking our courses, and you can draw all of the necessary sources and proofs to show the sheriff that this is what his duty is to do, and this is what a warrant's supposed to look like, and what it's supposed to have. And it has also got to be attached to that warrant a sworn affidavit, which is what the judge will respond off of to put a signature down. You know, you got to get a sworn affidavit from somebody. So without that sworn affidavit and the signature of the judge, both needs to be present. That's a faulty warrant. And again, there's no federal court that would, I don't think anyway, I guess they could be that crooked. We see what they do on a federal level lately. But most, I think generally speaking, there's no skin in the game for them, so there's no reason for them not to really, unless they get a phone call and the fix is in. But federal judges, I don't think, are really too quick to put their rear ends on the line for someone else unless there's something in it for them or it's something that they have to maintain status quo about, and if they don't, they're going to get stressed out by higher powers and so on. But anyway, if it's brought before the federal court, there's no doubt in my mind it should go through pretty easily that they should kick that warrant out. And that brings you in. Once that's kicked out, you've got all the paperwork. You've got the signed warrant. You've got the papers kicked out. You could take them and sue them now and get some good money for that. In order to do this, you have to know how to do it. You're not going to get a lawyer to do it for you. So,
hey,
bone up on it.
Under their statutes of practicing law without a license,
civil courts.
If you don't accept money, if I sat down and help you fill the paperwork out, they can't arrest me for that.
You can even charge for it if you want, but I wouldn't do that.
I'm just saying. I mean, what is there? Somebody obviously made a phone call, because if they're going after this guy for filing papers in a state court and getting him for practicing law without a license, first of all, I think they must have been very good papers or they wouldn't have bothered, right?
Well, look, here's the problem, okay? First of all, they're not licensed. I know they say they're licensed. Maybe Brent can comment on this, but they're not licensed per se. They have their papers. They're acknowledged in the bar and that kind of thing. So I guess I hear that they get a card that from the Bar Association or whatever that is, however that works. But look, there really is no license. The United States Supreme Court has already ruled that you can't license this to begin with. But they have wording in certain ways that can go after you, and they're in their civil law courts. You see, it's all about jurisdiction. If you're in a common law court, they can't apply those things against you. And that's why I think we get away with a lot of it, because we make such a big stink about a court of a record, about where the people were coming in under common law and the rules of common law. We have a lot of failings, of course, because we're learning over the past years. But every time we go in and we, get something wrong, well, we know how to get it right the next time. And so we've got a lot of, hard knocks. And that's what it takes to get through the system, because there is no place that I'm aware of that really educates people in this process. We do to a certain extent. I'd like to go back and get more detailed and information and instructions on writing papers and causes of actions and different things. But you have to do it in the proper jurisdiction where they can't really come out after you, because again, we're in a court of law when you're in a jurisdiction of that's a court of record, and they're in civil law courts where Rule 2 in 1938 fused together law and equity and called it civil law, however they did that. Which then, therefore, they abrogated the common law. And lawyers, a lot of lawyers will tell you, we've had judges, Supreme Court judges, in New York here, telling us that the common law has been abrogated. That's how bad it is. But I think on the federal level, they know the truth. They're a lot more educated, I think, and they kind of know the game. Remember, they're navigating, 57 different jurisdictions on the federal level. And on state levels, there's a couple of jurisdictions, of course, also, but most of those judges, I don't know what they know. All right, well, anyway, we're going to end questions there and move forward. Brent, are you with us here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right, I'm going to introduce Brent in a minute. And Gerard, you ready to take the controls here?
I'm muting until I'm needed, okay?
Okay, all right. All right, Brent Allen Winters is the author of the book The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you. Well, the number one concern in my mind, and has been for a couple of decades, is that that people understand what the common law is. And in order for me to do that, I suppose the first step would be for me to understand what it is. So I've spent a long time trying to understand, and that was while I was going through law school, and while I'm out of law school, and when a judge in a court, such as John was talking about, says that the common law is abrogated, that tells me that judge doesn't have a clue what the common law is, even if he practices it. The state of Utah, not too many years ago, passed a statute saying that the common law no longer applies in the courts of this state. That's silliness, stupidity. It's worse than stupidity. Why do I say that? Well, that'd be like saying the Bible no longer applies to mankind. You can say that till you're blue in the face, till the cows come home. That doesn't change the fact of the matter. That's the world in which we live. You can't change what is true law. You can't say, if you can say it, it doesn't apply. That's like the same problem a man saying, Bruce Jenner saying, well, now I'm a woman. More than that, I'm going to get an operation that will make it true. I don't care what he does. He can't make it true. He cannot make it true. You say the common law doesn't apply. That's beyond dumb. Well, the problem is, of course, people don't know what the common law is. I never get past this first step. If I could if I could get this first step in place and people say, oh, I know what the common law is, then all other things that we encounter would fall in place properly. Well, what is the common law? One fellow said it's as mysterious as the doctrine of the Trinity. Well, that's pretty mysterious in this sense. Logic won't reveal it to us. Fact reveals truth. Logic doesn't. Fact is the foundation of all truth. And our common law is about fact. It's not about logic. It doesn't really care that much about logic at the fundamental level. When you hear somebody start talking about logic and how we ought to learn how to be critical thinkers and all that kind of hooey, just dismiss them as part of the evil empire and the law of the city. That's not the key to truth. The key to truth is evidence and discerning fact. And the only way you can learn fact is through simple evidence. What is the common law? Well, let's ask ourselves first, why is it people don't know what it is? They don't know what it is. Lawyers don't know what it is. You wouldn't believe. Well, maybe you would. The definitions I've had lawyers give me about what the common law is. I interviewed a fellow, a right-headed fellow, the other day on Patriot Soapbox, a lawyer. He's suing the governor of his state, and he's going to sue him again on something else. He's right-headed. And he asked me, he said, you got this book about this comparative law text, 958 pages, about what the common law is. He said, I don't know. He said, if somebody asked me if I know what the common law is, I'd say, well, I've been trying to learn it now for a long time, but I still don't know much what it is, but that's what I'm doing. I'm practicing law to find out. Well, now that's getting closer. That's getting closer to the right answer. Well, the common law is not taught. It's not a comparative law, it's called. That book I mentioned, Excellence of the Common Law, is a comparative law text. The fundamentals are this. There are only two traditions of religion, law, and government in the world. Only two. There never have been any more than two. There are not now any more than two. And there never will be any more than two. Well, what are they? Well, the right one, and the wrong one, and the wrong one under 1,000 labels to confuse you, make you think that there's different ones. There aren't. Religion, law, and government. And our common law acknowledges the true lawgiver. That's religion. It acknowledges his law. That's law. And acknowledges the application of that law to government. But let me go a little farther and try to identify another feature, because to understand what our common law is an endeavor that requires that it catches you. You don't catch it. You don't get it. You don't understand it. It chases you down and tackles you, and then you get it. It's caught like a virus, only in the good sense. It's caught more than it is taught. Our common law is caught more than it is taught. Why is that? Why is it we can't do like the countries of the rest of the world and send people to school to understand what our common law is? Well, the reason for that is because our common law is not an academic endeavor. It's not scholastic. It's not about critical thinking and logic and hypotheticals. Well, what's it about? It's right down to the ground where you live. That's what it's about. And if you can't deal with it, a non-lawyer doesn't see it as his law, his way of life, then it won't work. It's not for academians. It's not for an elite class. And the only way to understand it is to compare it with its great antagonist, the law of the city. There's only the law of the land and the law of the city. There isn't anything else. The law of the land is another name for our common law. Our Constitution uses that phrase in Article 6. Well, then what is it? Brent, you're doing a lot of talking. You still haven't hit the nail with your head yet. Well, our common law, watch me very closely, our common law is process and not substance. Process and not substance. It is a way, it is a road, it is a course. I was talking to people Sunday, we were talking about our children, and some were expressing their disappointments about their children. And some said, I don't know that I could have done anything any different or any better. And they didn't turn out like I thought they ought to. And I'm hurt over the way my children turned out. And of course, if a fellow would look into what they did, you'd say, well, they did a pretty good job. They, as parents, they followed the right process, the right course, discipline, teaching, etc. Well, that's what God wants a fellow to do. He wants him to follow the right course. He doesn't want people to say, I'm going to make perfect children. I know people that have tried to do that. Maybe you have too. I know one fellow wound up in an insane asylum because his parents tried to make him perfect. He happened to be a shirt-tailed cousin of mine. He's gone now. His life was wasted away. Smart? Boy, was he smart. But it didn't work out, right? They weren't process-oriented. They were result-oriented. They were going to achieve the result no matter what. They had it in their heads what it was going to be, and they were going to get it. If you approach life with being result-oriented, I'm going to have $1 million. I'm going to be governor of my state. We are not living in a common law world because a common law mindset doesn't say that. A common law mindset says, I'm going to do right now what God wants me to do, and tomorrow I'm going to do the same thing, and I'm going to follow his course of process. I'm going to follow his way. I'm going to get on his path. I'm going to make his progress day by day. Let the chips fall where they may on the other end. When you go to court, when a lawyer goes to court in a common law country, he's not trying to reach a certain process. If he is, he won't last long. He'll have an emotional breakdown sooner or later. Why? Because the result does not belong to the litigants. It doesn't even belong to the jurors. That's why God said in the Bible, he said, you don't be afraid. When you go to court, don't be afraid of the face of any powerful man. Do not be moved with pity by any poor man. Judge the right judgment. But he said, don't worry about the judgment. The right judgment will happen if you follow the course of process. Don't be afraid about the judgment, because the judgment is mine. When you raise your children, follow the right course of process. And don't worry about the result, because who provides the result? Well, God says, I do, the lawgiver. He provides the result. My granddad used to say, he did all right. He's gone now. He used to say, people would say, boy, Mel, his name was Melvin. They said, boy, Mel, you've done good. Well, granddad lived in a house. He didn't have any running water. He didn't buy a new pickup truck every year. He didn't buy a new pickup truck every 15 years. He bought a used one about every 15 years. The same way with his cars. He milked his own cow. And he saved his pennies. And every year he planted his crops in the spring. Well, why did he plant them in the spring? Because that's the process, that's the law of process that God requires. And he would say, when people said, boy, you did quite well for yourself, Mel. You compiled a little land here and paid for it. And granddad would always say, I just planted the crops. God brought the increase. I didn't bring the increase. I have no control over that. I have no control over the rain, the temperature. All I know is I put the stuff in the ground in the spring like he told me to, and try to care for it, and he brings the increase. You see, it's our job to stick to the process. The result does not belong to us. Be not afraid of the face of any man in judgment if you're on the jury or if you're a litigant, because the result doesn't belong to you. It belongs to God. That's our common law tradition. The civil law tradition is not that way. The civil law tradition says the result belongs to the state. It belongs to the government. And they will get whatever the government, they will get what it commands in its statute. It will always get the result it wants, it says. It doesn't care about the process. It doesn't care about a true warrant. It doesn't care about the judge signing the warrant. It doesn't care about the modest inconvenience of giving an opportunity to be heard. No, we just got to get the result that the government commands. What is it that the governors of these states want? Well, they want the result that they command. Everybody put a goofy-looking diaper on your face. Why? Because I said so. Any process involved? No. Well, what's the proper process? Well, according to our common law, the legislature is supposed to send a bill to the governor for his signature that says you got to put a diaper on your face. That's the proper way to do it. And then the governor signs it, and then the governor says, I'm going to enforce this. And he'll try to enforce it, and then somebody will take him to court and say, you can't enforce that. That's silly. It's not constitutional. It's against my religion. It violates my freedom of speech, not to mention my freedom to breathe. And that is a constitutionally protected right, just like the freedom to travel. You say, well, that's not in the Constitution. No, it's not. But it's a constitutionally protected right nonetheless. Like our courts have said, the freedom to marry who you want is a constitutionally protected right. Why wouldn't we say that freedom to breathe and to talk clearly without a muffler on your face is a constitutionally protected right? It is. Breathing, I say, is a constitutionally protected right. Freedom of religion, against my religion to put a diaper on my face if I don't want to. Why? Because God said he wanted me to breathe the good air he gave me. That's why. Well, back to the process, you see. So the courts then weigh in and say, this law is vague. Well, you went through the proper process of passing the law, but Governor, you should have known better not to try to enforce this foolishness, because this is contrary to the first principles of our common law. We've written some of them down here in the state constitution or in this United States Constitution. Even if they follow the process, the government and those in government, that doesn't mean it's lawful. Well, I'm trying to get across here what our common law is. What is our common law? Our common law isn't whether or not necessarily you should wear a diaper on your face or thou shalt not murder. They murder is against the law in the communist countries, not to mention all of South America, and they're not common law countries. Well, what's the difference? The difference is when they charge you with murder in Argentina, try to find a lawyer that could protect you or could fight for you using law as a weapon in any meaningful way. The right to trial by jury, the right from unreasonable searches and seizures, the Fourth, the Fifth Amendment, the right to a public trial, which means an oral trial. See if you can get that in Argentina. What are we talking about? We're talking about substance? No, we're talking about the way substance is enforced. Is it against the law to murder in Argentina? Yes. Is it against the law to murder with malice and aforethought to kill another person in America? Yes. But we're a common law country. We have some of the same standards, a lot of the same end results that are commanded. God is the only one, listen to me close, the maker of all things is the only one who has jurisdiction to command an end result. That's why he says, do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor. Those are end result standards. That's not our jurisdiction. His jurisdiction to declare the end result. It's his jurisdiction to declare the judgment. And if you follow the process, then he delegates to men the declaration of the judgment. Yea or nay, in or out, up or down, black or white, guilty or innocent, whatever it is. Yeah, jurors have that prerogative given to them from their maker. But he gives us the standard, tells us to follow the process, and once you follow the process, the chips will fall where they're supposed to fall, and the judgment will be obvious, and then he delegates men to declare it, the judgment that he has given. It's the process, you see, that's important. Is it fair? I wanted to drive a tractor so bad I couldn't see straight when I was 4 years old, 4 and a half. I'd wake up every morning and ask my dad, can I go to the hay field? It was during hay season. Drive a tractor? No, 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 he said. Finally, one morning, he hollered at me and my brother upstairs, and I could tell the way he hollered early in the morning. He said, boys, run downstairs. We run downstairs. We knew that was the day. The old WD-45 Alice Chalmers was fired up. It was out in the field on south of the house, and we ran out there with the teenage boys that he had gathered to help him. Then the problem came. Who gets to drive the tractor first, me or my brother? So Dad reached down and picked a couple of straws up off the ground and broke them different lengths and put them in his hand and told us to draw straws. Now the result didn't really matter to him. What mattered to him was that he gave us a fair process, because each one of us wanted to go first, and there was only one tractor, the WD-45 Alice Chalmers. The process was what was important. We had neighbors. They get a bottle of Coke. There were five boys in the family, and they'd all get to split it. So, or if there were only two. But the fellow that poured the glasses, he got the last choice of which glass, after they divided up, which glass he got to choose. The others got to choose first. That way, see, he was very careful to make them all perfectly even. Otherwise, if he got to choose first, the process is what's important here. And God wants us to live our lives according to his process. Our common law is process. It's due process. That's what it is. That's everything it is. It doesn't include due process. It is due process. The way you do things, the manner in which you go about it, is the important point. And God said that. He said, I'll take care of the result. You just shut your mouth if you have to. Shut your mouth. You can quit talking back to me and do what I tell you to do. Just do what I tell you to do. That means the way I tell you to do it. And I'll take care of the result, and it'll be to your benefit. That's what he's saying. Wow. Once I lit on to that idea, and it came clear as crystal what our common law is, then everything became 10 times more tranquil for me. I go into court, and the judge says, well, Mr. Winters, what are you asking me to do? Or what are you telling me to do? I've had judges say that to me. You know what I say to the judge when he says that to me? Of course, I say it very respectfully. I say, well, judge, you know that I'm not paid to make that decision. That's why they give you the big bucks. And they do. You know, where I'm at, they pay these state judges about $175,000 a year, and they don't have to ask anybody for it like I do and try to weasel it out of them or get them to pay me. You know, they say the only people in America, that the law of contracts says get paid up front in full are hookers and prostitutes, and lawyers. It's true. Why is that? Well, the reason's obvious. The reason's obvious because you might not get paid if you don't get paid up front. House painters, they get paid and they finish the job. Mechanics, they get paid and they finish the job because people realize they did a good job. With a lawyer, you can't always tell. That's another story. But the bottom line is lawyers don't get to decide the results in a court case. They're not paid to decide. They are paid, if they're paid. They're paid to insist that due process is followed. That's all a lawyer can do. That's all anybody, that's all any litigant can do. Insist that due process is followed. A while ago he talked about judge didn't sign the warrant. That's a violation of due process. That's not a matter of result. That's how things are to be done. The judge, and neutral, our Constitution, says that Fourth Amendment, that a warrant must be signed by a neutral and a detached magistrate. Neutral and detached, yeah, that means he hasn't got a dog in the fight. He hasn't got a stake in the game. He doesn't know anything about it. He's neutral. And not only neutral, detached. That means he doesn't know anything about it until somebody brings the subject up to him in court. And if it's not a neutral and detached magistrate that signs it, well, you violated the way things are done. That's due process, the process that is due and owing to all concern. Due process is the biggest, most overarching, most controlling, most important, most defining subject that anybody in life can study and contemplate. I can't control my life. I cannot control the results of what happens. And the older I get, the more I know I'm not in control. I am not, as the poet said, master of my destiny. Hogwash. If you are, if you think you are, you're going to come to a rude awakening someday. Maybe you're in denial and you've already come to a point of awakening. God says he's the only one that controls the future. He doesn't want us going to witches, warlocks, Ouija boards, crystal balls, witches. I already mentioned those. No, you don't do that. You don't do that because astrologers, no. Stargazers, reading your horoscope, no. He hates that. He says, I'm the master of the future. I control it. What I want you to do is follow the process that I tell you to follow. Be fair. Demand fairness for yourself and for others. Fair play. Fight a fair fight in this adversarial tradition we call our common law. Well, I don't know. If I get one point across in 15, 20 minutes or however long I've talked, I'm happy. The one point I want to get across is this. Common law does not include due process. That's all for what our common law is. The law of the city, by contrast, cares not for it at all, doesn't care how you get to the result. The mean, the ends justifies the means in all the rest of the world. The ends justifies the means. The motto of the Jesuit order, the ends justifies the means. That means torture. That means anything goes, anything. In our common law tradition, the means justifies the ends, you see. The means, the process, the way. Well, I hope I haven't repeated myself, but I have said the same thing over and over again, I hope in different ways. Just recently, things that have happened in my own law practice and listening to others, it's driven home to me the importance of the simplicity of this message of what due process is, of what common law is. It's due process. That's what it is. How we do things, not what we do, but how we do it. Well, this is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com. And to that end, commonlawyer.com, to that end, on Saturday mornings, we're teaching a class in due process. Go to commonlawyer.com, go to the events button, events, click on it, and it will guide you through how you can participate in that course. And those that are more technical than I tell me it's evergreen, evergreen. That means once you get started in the course, if you start in the middle of the course, you can go to the website and watch the previous classes because they're going to be they are being posted. And then you can get the rest of them that you haven't yet. You can get those live. It's 2 hours. It's on the platform, on the website, 2 hours long. I'll talk for about an hour. Then there's chat over to the side. You can chat to me and ask questions, make comments. Well, I don't want you telling me off. It doesn't get us anywhere, even if I deserve it. It's bad form, bad process to do that to a teacher, just like it'd be bad process to do that to a judge in a courtroom, even if he is a jerk. There's a proper process, you see, always to follow to deal with abuses of power. And God tells us what they are. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, you can join us. It'll tell you how to do it. With that, if you enter the course, you get access to the good book. A Common Lawyer translates and annotates the Bible from the original tongues. Over 15,000 footnotes. I call it toward a raw translation. Some people call it the winterized version of the Bible. You get access to that in digital form because we use it. We're going now through the three trials of Jesus Christ to demonstrate what violations of due process are. Fundamental common law due process. We call it common law due process. That's redundant, but helps explain our common law is due process. We talk about that. And we'll go to the book of Acts and show how Paul dealt with the law of the city when he was up against the Roman Empire and the Talmudic, the Pharisees, the Babylonian Judaites, and how they tried to kill him, and always to violate due process, to violate it, to short circuit the process, the modest inconvenience of just following process, making sure that the fight is fair. That's the fundamental problem in America. Our common law, which is due process, our common law is among the greatest blessings that we have. Without our common law, we would not be who we are. Our common law is what unites Americans into one mindset. The common law, the laws of nature, as the Declaration of 76 puts it, that's our common law. That's what that phrase means. And it is our commonness as Americans. It's being thwarted, kicked aside, ignored, violated with increasing viciousness right now as I speak. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. Thank you, John. Thank you, Gerard. This platform is important. Lawyers won't change America. No. It's folk who will struggle to worry over what our law is and how to use it. Folk, it's not for lawyers. It's for everybody else. And if everybody else doesn't try to gain not the details, forget the details. I don't even care about the details. I care about due process. And it is true. You can see when the fight's not being fair. You can see that much. That's what you need to know more about. Thank you. And back to you, Gerard, if you're there. When he finds the button.
He'll get here pretty quick.
Okay, Terry. Thank you.
Thank you,
Brent. Appreciate you too, Terry, for trying to get me on here.
we'll work it out maybe tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your comments. Gerard, are you around? I see you there.
I don't know why you can't hear me.
I can hear you now. It's all yours.
Oh, I don't. I was trying to talk to Brent, but what I was going to say is, people that want to learn the common law, they're out there and they'll learn it if they pay attention, but a lot of people don't want to know it because they're comfortable where they're at and they're comfortable not having to make decisions. And I gave a lesson today against my will, so to speak, because I refused to wear a mask. And so I walked into our little Stewart's, and I've done it 1,000 times before. Nobody gives me any problems. And if somebody comes up and says, "Where's your mask?" I tell the little girl, I say, "Well, I have a health condition that precludes me from wearing a mask." And they never question me any further than that. They can't really, legally, by law, they can't ask you what your condition is, because that's a double violation. It's a violation of HIPAA, and it's a violation of the American with Disabilities Act. But I haven't had any trouble. But the last 2 weeks, everybody is masked up like with a vengeance. I didn't see one person in there without a mask on. Usually I'll see, you know, myself and maybe somebody else or whatever. So they had a different manager on, and she said, "You can't come in here without a mask," like a bulldog, practically jumping over the counter. And I said, "I'm sorry, I have a condition that precludes me from wearing a mask." And she just looked at me and glared at me, and I said to her, I said, "Are you going to refuse me service due to my disability?" And she went, and waved me on like she was disgusted. And so as I'm walking away, I said, "Well, it's a bunch of baloney anyway. It doesn't work, and it's going to kill you, and it's not lawful anyway." And there was a guy sitting at one of the tables eating, and he had his mask around his neck because he had to get the food down his throat. And he said, "What's your problem anyway?" And I said, "You are my problem, because you're a robot and you're a sheep and you don't even know what you're talking. I follow the science." I said, "Ooh, Fauci science?" I said, "Where's your goggles? The latest thing is you're supposed to have goggles on too now. Didn't you hear that?" I said, "You're eating there with no mask. You're hollering at me. You look foolish. You feel safe?" You know, and "You've got to wear a mask because the law says so." I said, "Let me tell you something. It's not a law. It's an edict. And I said, it was never passed into a law. It's an executive order, and they can't enforce it. Well, now I got half the people going, yeah, he's right, and the other half the people looking scared like someone's going to get killed. But we had a little lesson on the common law right there in Stewart's. I said, well, I'll tell you what. You go ahead and call the cops. You tell them to come. I want them to arrest me because I need the money. And I said, and I'm going to sue everybody, including the cops. I'm telling you right now they can't enforce it. And everybody that's ever resisted, including that barber who they took his license away and then went to court, and he won it twice. He won it once in the local court, and he won it once on appeal because the prosecutor pushed it. And I said, the trouble with this country is nobody's resisting this crap. Nobody's dying. Yes, they are. I said, nobody. I said, the only people are dying is the people who Cuomo helped die by pushing those patients into those old people. There's no young children dying. There's no healthy people dying. It's only people with other conditions. I said, you better educate yourself. Well, they couldn't get me out of there quick enough, but this is things that we need to do in our daily lives. Until we resist, this thing's going to go on and on and on unless we push back. And everybody's afraid to push back. They're all sheeple, as far as I can see. I don't want to take the whole time up, but I want to prepare you to start thinking about doing proactive things to end this. We got to sue our governors. We got to grab our sheriffs, and we got to tell them, look, you got to come out in public saying you're not supporting this. And don't let them tell you that we're a private business and it's our wish that you don't, because that's not the case. Stewart's didn't make the law. The government made the law. They're enforcing it. It's not their policy that everybody wears masks. Because that's the policy, they better be making everybody do it all over the world. What it is the government put an edict in, and they're enforcing it. So they're not a private business anymore. They're doing what the government says. So, you know, what, I don't have to shop there. And when I go in, it's like I'm contracting with them. But when they're trying to enforce something that an edict the state put in that violates my rights, my choices, now they're in concert with the state violating my rights. You know, if it was a private business and they wanted only people in burkas to come in and cover their face, and it wasn't an edict by the government, and then it would be up to me whether or not I would put up with that in that business. And don't let them tell you that you can't, that Walmart is a private business and they can put these restrictions on, because they're not a private business. They're a public business. They're open to the public. They have a public venue. But besides all that, they get something like $6 or $8 billion a year from the federal government out of our tax dollars, which means they're owned by us. So they can't. We have a right to shop there if we're going to give them $6 billion a year. So I'm just giving you guys little clues about what you need to educate yourself. Because you can't resist if you're not educated. If you don't know the law, the common law, you can't run around saying things and then look foolish and not being able to answer them. But we need to resist this baloney. And the way you do it is by listening, coming here, getting Brent's book, listen to the lectures, and training yourself. That's what NLA is all about. But anyway, I don't want to take all the time up. It's just that it hit such a chord with me today. That I was in the middle of Stewart's giving a speech, so to speak, and there was quite a few people that were going, yeah, he's right, which I was surprised. That made me feel good. So anyway, we got people in the queue, and I'll get to them now. It looks like we have Les. I don't know from where, so I've unmuted Les. Go ahead, Les. What's your question or comment? Les, you've been unmuting. Can everybody else hear me? Hopefully I'm not talking to the wall. Hello, hello. Are you there?
Are you there?
I can hear you, Gerard.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna just go ahead and drop Les. I don't see him there. He doesn't seem to be answering. So If he comes back in, he can jump back in the queue and we'll pick him up on the other side. Okay, it says Sarah from L.A., Louisiana, I presume. Go ahead, Sarah. You've been unmuted.
Hi. Hope y'all are doing well. I was listening to the question about the gentleman who was arrested for practicing law without a license, and I just come across a similar case in some studying that I was doing, and I can't put my hands on the law at this moment, but it does say that no state is allowed to license a attorney at all. So even a bar lawyer, a member, he has a membership and not a license. And so there are some case laws that he can look up on the Supreme Court level that might help him out on that. But, you know, I keep researching and looking at the law as a whole. I know a lot of the members come across pages looking for help with their court cases and things like that. And I think at the biggest problem with the court proceedings and the trouble people are having in the court system is we're trying to mix common law and procedural commercial law, and they just don't mix very well. Our entire court system as we know it now is a commercial. It's a commercial transaction, and it's all about contracts. So when we go in there and we're contesting jurisdiction, as long as we've never taken an offer of contract and you stop that jurisdictional proceeding right at the beginning before you enter a plea and things like that, then you have a much better chance. But a lot of people are trying to bring up subject matter jurisdiction for cases like a foreclosure or some kind of civil suit. And from what I understand, they have subject matter jurisdiction over that because it all comes down to an offer of contract. And if we're U.S. citizens, then we have no actual rights until we take our trust account and express the trust. I think that another problem in a lot of the suits that you're trying to bring forth is we need to have an arbitration clause in the paperwork. If an arbitration clause was added, then we wouldn't have to climb through this very corrupt court system that we see right now. An arbitration clause would take it out of their court completely, and you can go to a private arbitration company that is basically, you know, more, I guess, fair to both parties. And if you look at the contracts of every company, I mean, from Verizon to Walmart, everyone has an arbitration clause, and they're doing that because it works out for both parties, really. But most people don't know about arbitrational clauses, and so they just go through the court system, which is hard to navigate. It's expensive. Most people don't have the knowledge, background, or funds to really do it. But if we added an arbitration clause and sent our paperwork in with a clause saying, look, if you don't respond, then I reserve the right to take this matter to an arbitrator, and then we wouldn't have to deal with the court system. I find from my research that an arbitration clause really would make a big difference, because then you have grounds to sue, and if the arbitrator finds no problems in the contract and the procedures, then the arbitrator has final word, and you can take that award, you can get your arbitration award, and actually go for damages and, you know, go after the person's assets if you wanted to. I think that that would bring a lot of power to some of these suits that people are trying to bring into the court system. as we stand right now, I just don't see, I don't see it going well, just because it's so complicated and so corrupt on every level. And at, you know, at its basis, it's definitely unconstitutional, except that it's a commercial court. It's all commercial transactions. So if it's commercial, then it's only by contract, and we've contracted into a lot of these systems unknowingly, of course. So at its root, it's still fraud. But try to argue that with them, and they have have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm going to add to what you said, because sure. in my experience, first of all those adhesion contracts and all that stuff that they think because we're U.S. citizens, it was all obtained by fraud. However, they're also very adamant about getting you to plea. Why? Because that plea gives them that jurisdiction, and they'll assign you a lawyer. I mean, if you just shut your mouth, they don't even know how to move forward. I've seen that. They go crazy. They want you to plea, because if you don't plea, then they don't have the jurisdiction that they require in the first place. So now it depends. Now, are they coming after you, or are you going after them? You know, if they're coming after you and you don't plea, that's a very powerful strategy on that. I mean, people have a hard time because the judges trick them into giving them jurisdiction. I've watched judges roll around like a crocodile that had a piece of meal and he was going to drown it, roll like that to force the guy to plea, and even saying that I'll put the plea in for you. You have to object to that if that's the case or where you're at. Now, arbitration, it's all well and good, but I think you can get just as much corruption in arbitration depending on the situation. However, you know it's cheaper than going into the regular law, because Walmart and them wouldn't be putting those arbitration contracts in, and everybody does it, you're right. I've seen other contracts. They do not want to go to court, because even they, I think, it costs them money, because they got to pay these lawyers $300 an hour to show up. One of the things I love to do is take a big corporation like Walmart to small claims court, because they got to show up with their corporate lawyer, and it costs them the same as a regular court, where you and I can go in there and pay our $15 or whatever it is, you know what I mean? And they have to answer that. So that's another strategy. But anyway, I want to move on. That was a very good, you know, observation on your part. And look, we got to keep, like John said, you got to keep experimenting and see what works. And if you can get to some people that have blood in their veins, you know, I mean, I don't even trust arbitration if you don't have a good system, a good arbitrator. But, like you said, you can hire a private company, and they can't refuse it. Well, look, both sides have to agree on arbitration. Of course, when Walmart and these other companies, when you sign on that dotted line, it says that you're agreeing to arbitration before you're unable to go to court. You have to go through the arbitrator. So it's something to think about, anyway.
Oh, one last comment is that I've seen where an arbitration clause is added in a unilateral contract, where if they don't respond, that's still accepting the arbitration clause in contract, just like they don't respond to any of our paperwork that we send in. And what really came to mind was people like in family court or foreclosure court. I'm not dealing with anything like that, but just from my research, it seems like putting that in one where they're not going to respond anyway, we know they don't respond, that would count for their, they would be opting in to the arbitration. They would be agreeing by their silence. And I came across a couple of really good documents that have proven beneficial that I'll try to get to someone to maybe look at and share with others.
I'd like to read that anyway and get some ideas on it. You know, and look, if they don't respond, they're in default anyway. However, like you said, trying to make hay with that is hard. The family courts are different than the other courts. They have a lot more leeway. However, I think that it's much easier to move a case into arbitration from family court. And I don't think you'll get as much resistance from the judge. That's what they're supposed to be doing, by the way. Years ago, when people wanted a divorce or whatever, and they ended up in the lawyer's office, his main job was supposed to get them to reconcile them, to arbitrate it. They don't do that anymore because they're too busy trying to make money on the divorce. But I don't want to go too long, but look at, I'd be very willing to look at some of those papers if you want to send them to Jan or somebody like that. And we'll pass them around and see if we can make some hay with them too. Okay?
All right. You have a good night.
Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Okay,
we're going to go ahead and move to Roger from Wisconsin. How are you doing, Roger?
Not too bad. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're coming in loud and clear.
Good deal. I'm on speaker, so if it gets too much of a vibration or echo, let me know.
Okay.
All right, I'd just like to report for Wisconsin today. I guess I was on the phone this morning trying to get a hold of senators, congressmen, anybody that would answer an email or a call since we had a mandatory mask mandate statewide last week go in effect. And I guess from what I gathered from talking to many people is we originally challenged the unconstitutional mask order a few months ago, and the Supreme Court did side with the conservatives, and it was overruled. But within the last week, supposedly one of our conservative Supreme Court justices has stepped down or retired, and a new liberal Supreme Court judge takes the seat, which will now have us outnumbered, liberals versus conservatives, even if you want to call them that for names, I guess, on our Supreme Court. And then Tony Evers thought it would be a good political play, obviously, to push back another executive order or unconstitutional order or whatever you want to call it. And that's why I was on the phone this morning getting a hold of anybody that would listen to my district speaker for the Congress and different congressmen, this, that, and the other. And I got a hold of one gentleman, and, well, I should say a secretary or a lackey of a senator, and this word, they had specifically said there's many Republican senators, congressmen, everybody in the state, along with our speaker, that are missing in action right now. And the big thing they said was this, they got a vote coming up here or some sort, election on 11th, but not only that, school is starting. So with this mask order, the schools are shut down, and he told me specifically it's a power play to keep the school shut down, and they're trying to avoid even challenging the unconstitutional order.
So they don't want to talk about it because they know that it won't hold up probably.
Well, it's either the Republicans are compromised because they had spoke about it within the same day the order was put in effect, and now our speaker and some Republicans don't even want to either come to work or pick up the phone. So it's really eerie. You know, not only you're fighting Democrats, now we're fighting Republicans.
Well, that you look at, that was always the case. It's just that this whole COVID thing has now exposed them for what they are. And I really do believe that that's what Trump is trying to accomplish here. They're pushing the envelope purposely so that everybody can see their true colors. Look at, when all is flushed out, every mayor, every governor, everybody that jumped up on top of the stool and decided to become draconian, they show their true colors. And the thing is it's not just because they want the power, it's because they are like a mobster. They are made men, and they have to follow the instructions of their handlers, and that's what's happening now. And they're so, you know, who's ever handling these people, they don't want to let anything go because they can taste the victory. And so they're vicious right now. But what they're doing is they're the snake eating its tail right now, because it would do them good if you want to, if I was going to counsel them on how to move forward, I would say now's the time to back up, take two, you know, because they've been doing two step forwards and one step backwards for years. But it seems to me that they're at a point where they're not even willing to take one step backwards. So what that's going to do is it's going to force us to fight with them. And it's going to force them out in the open. And that's a good thing. It really is. Everybody, oh, look, I knew it was going to get worse. Good. Let it get worse. We want it to get worse. We want it to get worse.
You're
because
right.
At the end of the day, there'll be no question on who the gallows will be built for. You know? I mean, look at this New York governor. He's got more blood on his hands. And then he does more every day to make it worse.
More. It keeps getting worse.
It keeps getting worse, and there's no way that he can get out of being hung by the neck till dead, and he should be left up there until sundown so everybody can see him. besides the fact that he took a medicine that's been proven I hear 50 years, 60 years, hell, Washington was using quinine, which is basically what that Qualicurine is. It's just quinine.
It went back all the way to the military time is what I heard.
Right. 1776. It went back way, way back. I study homeopathy, and Samuel Hahnemann, the way he discovered it was he knew they were using quinine for malaria. Now, this is back in the 1800s, okay?
Uh-huh.
The middle to mid-1800s. And they didn't know why it worked. They just knew it worked. And so they said, because it's bitter, because it's that. And so he decided that he would experiment with it, and he started taking little tiny doses of it himself. He started diluting it and succussing it, banging it, putting a shock through it, because we know now that when you do that to a liquid, to water, that it will imprint the signature of the original thing. It writes a signature in there, and there was some Japanese scientist that took water and played music in front of the glasses and then took a drop of water out of that glass and froze it.
Have you
seen
the one with plants?
Right, and it makes, you know, you can actually see the difference in the medium. So water will transfer, will imprint certain vibrations and frequencies. And it will put him in, even though it's not the original medicine. But what he found out was when he took it in low doses that it produced the same symptoms that it cured. And that he came down with malaria symptoms from taking a very minute dose. And he came to the conclusion of the similar, I don't know, it's Latin, similar being similar, like cures like. And it's been discovered for many, many years through, even in the jungles of the Amazon, the Indians, if you got bit by a certain spider, they would catch that spider. And it was kind of like voodoo, but it really had a scientific thing that they didn't know.
That's no different than a snake bite, right?
Right, and they would take it, and they would cook it and burn it and break the ashes and feed it to you, and you'd get better. Because they're giving you a little bit of the poison to kick your immune system back into the proper vibration. But I don't want to get too long on it.
Can I raise another point about the vibration? That's very interesting because not a lot of people understand. It goes back to Tesla. Everything is a frequency, a vibration, or whatever you want to call it. But I think this is very important. People should be taught this. It's the same as the Bible would teach, but the universal laws and hermetic laws have been around forever, and people need to understand. That's why when people are in a negative state and they're frustrated and they're fearful, which the government fucking pushes out there because they understand psychology, when people are in a fear state, they cannot function properly.
Well, the quickest way to get somebody sick is put them under mental stress.
And
that's an actual thing, and you're right. And it's all part of the same. The trouble with the Newtonian medicine, the allopathic, all germ theory, is that it's very narrow minded, and it doesn't take the whole organism into effect, into consideration rather, and that's the problem. So, you can die of a broken heart, believe it or not. It happens.
Well,
it happens
well,
all the time.
How many people quit work or lose their love of their life, and they have no purpose in life, and they die within 6 months. I tell every old person I see that is working hard, that is 70 or 80 years old, I always tell them, and they know it because they're usually in good shape, they're working hard, and they have a good disposition. There's a reason why people live long. It's because it's how you. It's not just that good, diet. It's a healthy mentality. It's mind, body, spirit, soul, everything. And that's the big thing when you take away not only even Bill Gates and Steve Jobs admitted they wouldn't put their kids on the internet and the devices. They're exactly what they are. They're vices. So, I mean, they've been planning what's going on for a long time, and I just, hope everybody wakes up and gets a little time away from everything, is what's going on. And even with the schools, I talk to a lot of people, and they're crying about public schools. I said, why are you crying about public indoctrination camps? I go, it's publicly known for years that they've been dumbing down the public to be good worker bees. They don't want independent, free-thinking, critical-thinking individuals, let alone if public schools are so wonderful, they would teach you about natural remedies, economics, finances, and natural healing.
Well, look at this is the opportunity for us to take back our republic, and we'll see what happens. We're not going to get another chance. This has never happened in the history of the world. So this is a very profound thing that's going on, and it's worldwide. It's not just here. It's everywhere. Of course, we're going to get very bad here because America is kind of the light of the world, and they have to take America out before they can capture the rest of the world. So everybody's looking to us. So it's really by our example. Look, in Germany, they said 17,000. It was like 2 million people in the streets protesting this man. They're done. They're finished. They're fed up. And I'll tell you, people are on the verge of that here. And
where is that, Europe?
Look, when I went into Stewart's tonight and I started talking, and the manager couldn't get me out of there quick enough. She was nervous. But you know what? They can't stop me from talking in there. I didn't start a riot. I didn't tell anybody to hit anybody or anything like that. When you're in public, you can have a discussion. There's nothing they can do about it. We're allowed to assemble, and we're allowed to speak. And so far, this far, that's why we should all be out there speaking and assembling and talking to our sheriffs. And just think about this whole thing. They don't want us to come face-to-face. They don't want us praying. They don't want us doing anything that what makes us human. And they want to make us transhuman. They want to hook us to machines, and they want to be able to control us. And I'll tell you what, their vaccine is actually hooked in to the electronic vibrational Wi-Fi. They're going to be able to tweak it at will. They'll probably be able to take out certain groups of people by the radio frequency waves that they happen to want to do that month or whatever. So, it's well known that Gates and them have been experimenting with all this stuff. What can we make to take out all Asians or all blacks or all their target? They experiment by targeting groups of people, and they're eugenics. Look at Hitler never ended. We just brought them over here, and they put them in the schools, and they did Project Paperclip and all this other stuff.
We took all the scientists and put them in NASA. Yeah. Werner von Braun to the moon. Yeah, I understand. That's interesting.
Look, everybody has to wake up. But the main thing is our fundamental rights. You don't have to be a brain surgeon. You don't even have to know everything. Like Brent says, we need to come back to common sense. And common sense tells you that there's something wrong. Walmart put this mask order in like a week ago, or that nobody's coming in without a mask and blah, blah, blah. And I happened to call them because they said they weren't accepting cash at one point, and I wanted to know why. But in the course of that, getting on the phone and going through all the stupid phone trees, they got a big long thing of air about how you have to have a mask and you're not going to let you in the store and blah, blah, blah. And I said, that's nice. I didn't hear anything in there about anything about somebody who has a health problem that can't wear a mask. There's no provision there. So when the girl got on to answer my questions, I said, you know, what are you going to... I said, I have a health condition. I can't wear a mask. I don't hear anything in that big, long announcement. Oh, no, we'll facilitate you. We got these black shirt people. You just go see them, and they'll take care of you. And I don't know how they figure they're going to take care of me. What, are they going to do my shopping for me? I don't want their COVID hands on my fruit. I have to squeeze the stuff I buy and smell it. You know, so I don't know what they I found out what they're going to do because another person, a woman, had the same problem, and she went in and found one of those black shirt people, and it was a woman, and she took her in the back, and she handed her this mask, and she said, wear it around your neck. So it's not about safety, it's about compliance. Wear it around your neck. Can you imagine? And that's what when I went into Walmart, I told them, I said, you know what Walmart said to do? Wear it around your neck. You're all sheep. Anybody with their mask on, you're sheep. You should take them off right now. It's disgusting, you know.
Right.
I got to get going here. I'm getting on a tangent, and I'm gonna go ahead and go to the next guy, Roger. But it's been good talking, and we can talk some more about this next week.
Hey, thank you much, sir. You have a good night. Yeah, thanks for your time.
I see Brent in here. Is Brent looking to talk again? I'm gonna open him up anyway because maybe he's getting ready to bust. Is Brent in the end? Is that you?
No, that's me. No, I wasn't looking to talk. I guess I'm just in the queue. I probably got in it because I thought that's what I was supposed to do, but I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
you're in control of me. You can mute me or unmute me, whatever.
Well, I opened you up because I wasn't sure if you just got in there or you were in there, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And
no,
go
I'm
on
here.
To the next guy if you don't have anything very profound to comment. Okay.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Go on.
We got Drew from PA. I'm going to go ahead and open him up. Thank you, Brent. Drew.
Yeah, hi, John. How you doing?
Yeah, we're doing good.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to talk to you. I'm in PA, Northeast PA. I would like to get involved running something here. For PA, I heard earlier in the show that in the conference that you were needed somebody in Pennsylvania.
Yep. You should call up Jan, and he'll direct you to somebody in that area that you can connect up with.
I'm very active in the area too, and been involved with you guys for a long time. So. Mm-hmm. Over 10 years, I think. So but I would be interested in that. Also, I wanted to talk about this thing with the stores and all, you know. I've been to Wegmans, and I've had to fight with them over the mask thing. So, mm-hmm. I walk in the door, and they say, oh, you can't go in without the mask. And, I said, well, why not? He says, it's the law. I said, it's not the law. Show me. And, he says, here's the board right here. I said, yeah, it's a CDC recommendation. Then he gets on the walkie. He gets on the walkie-talkie. I says, "I hope you don't call the police." I said, "Because if you do, I would have to sue you." He goes, "I know. I'm getting my manager." So he got his manager. The manager came and said, "Oh, you got to wear a mask." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because we're protecting everybody." I said, "Well, you're wearing a mask, and everybody else is." He said, "Yeah, well, this is a." He says, "I said it's not the law anyway." He says, "Well, it's our policy. We're a private company." I said, "No, you're not private. You're open to the public."
That's right.
Yeah, and then I said, "Well, listen, I'm not trying to be racist here." I said, "But if you're private and a black guy comes to the store and you kick him out, discrimination," I said, "you can still get sued." I said, "Because you're open to the public." I said, "Same thing. You're discriminating against me." I said, and so I said, "All they want to do is buy these two plants here." And he said, "Okay, go ahead." So let me go to the register.
Well, but, you're right. It's unconstitutional, and they can't justify it.
Well, it's a violation of your rights. Yeah, I agree, and I think that everybody should have a little flyer made up that acts as a cease and desist letter, as well as a lawsuit notice, and you should hand it to them in the store when they do this. I really think this is what should happen to help people fight this.
I have the OSHA guidelines, and basically what they say is those masks are dangerous. If your employer's not giving them to you and you're not changing them every so often depending on the environment you're in, and they're using them in ways they were never meant to be used. A surgical mask is meant for a sterile environment.
The N95s, right? They're not supposed to be reused like that.
No. The surgical mask, which is the little ones that they you see them using and operating.
Oh, little paper ones, yeah.
Yeah, it's a paper cloth thing.
Yeah,
they get clogged after a while. The N95, it doesn't filter going out. It only it's meant for a dirty environment. In other words, a contaminated environment. So it protects you, but if you cough in an N95, that little valve lets it go right out.
Like but it's not going to contain.
I said, you know, you're sitting there with no mask on eating, and do you feel safe? I mean, I could cough. Yeah, I could have an N95 mask on and cough right in your face, and it'll come right out of that mask like nothing. And, you know, when you're dealing, first of all, there is no science behind any of this that proves anything they're doing. There's no
good absolutely.
Look, absolutely. If you're dealing with a virus, it's microns. It's like 4 microns or something. It goes right through the freaking cloth. And if you see these scientists when they're working on viruses, they don't have some crappy little mask on. They got a freaking spacesuit on. You know,
absolutely.
Because unless you got positive pressure oxygen going in there, and you're like all bound up with rubber bands around your sleeves and everything, that virus is going to get you. And it's meant to get you. We're not meant to social distance. Social distancing is baloney. There's no science behind it. They came up with the idea from a high school science fair. There's no there's no scientific anything. What it's designed to do is keep us apart, keep us from assembly.
Absolutely.
Look, if they figure this thing out, would be the quickest way to knock out most of our rights, our rights. Of,
well, that's not working because assembly. I'll tell you what. Yeah, that's not working because I'll tell you, the rallies in Harrisburg was me and a girl that started those rallies. So, you know, it's not helping with the social distancing.
You got to keep them going. And look, I think one thing, everybody says, you know, they're very depressed about what's going on because nobody's resisting and stuff. Americans are way more tolerable than they are over in Europe. And I think one of the reasons we're more tolerable is due to the fact that we have a Second Amendment right, and we all know that we got this gun in our pocket or in our under our bed or behind our door, and that makes us feel good. You know, and they say, well, eventually I have to get my gun, but that's bad, because if you think that gun's going to free you, if it comes time to get your gun out, you're never going to get the freedom back that you lost. I mean, that means that everything is done. And we don't want to get to. We don't want to ever let it get to that point. We really don't. We have
absolutely.
To
I got you. Right. Right. You have to do it beforehand.
Yeah.
Right.
I
agree with you.
I'm a Second Amendment person, and I believe in arming myself. But you know, that's not going to fix this problem. Okay.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah. You know, I went into a restaurant with a lady a week ago. Not a restaurant. It was a bar, actually. You know. And I walked in, she walked in with her mask, and I walked in without my mask. As I walked in, the bartender jumped all over me. Hey, we gotta get the mask, gotta get a mask on. I'm looking around, there's not a person in the place with the mask on. And I look at him, I said, you're joking, right? He says, no, I'm serious, you have to get a mask on. I said, you're kidding me. So I go out the door, I get a mask on, I come in, I sit at the bar, he says, well, I just come over to tell you that. You gotta come in the door with the mask on, then you can take it off. Like, I said, what sense does that make?
It's a religion. It's a rubric.
It's mind control. It's mindless minions. I can't believe it. But anyway, so I go and I say, he said, what are you going to have? I said, I'm going to have nothing. If the lady, if she wants something, get her something, but I'm having nothing. And she looks at me and she says, I've never been out with anybody like this. I said, well, yeah, I stand up for myself.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were there for a while. It was crazy.
I want to organize a protest on Walmart, and Walmart gets something like I don't know how many billion dollars from the federal government, so they're really not a private company, and this
they're basically working for the government now. Yeah, they're working for the government now.
Well, they're using our taxes, and so therefore it's our store
to do that.
We have a right.
That's right.
To be there.
That's so, true, absolutely. Yeah, that makes
sense.
We'll
all go in with masks on, and we'll take them off when we're in the store. We'll have signs. We'll unfold the signs. We'll march around the store. You know, I need 20 or 25 people to do this. I don't want to go in.
I like that idea.
And then when you get a little hibachi, because Walmart lets campers camp in their parking lot. You get a little hibachi.
Oh, okay.
And
you have a little group cookout.
We'll burn the mask when we come out of the store.
Hey, that's a good one. Burn the mask
there.
After you make the hot dogs, you can burn the mask.
Exactly. So I'm just saying, I'm giving you guys ideas on what to do, and we need.
Yeah, you are giving me ideas. Yeah.
We need to take them to legal task. We need to start suing these people.
Listen, this is what I think needs to be done. Okay, you're right with that. I think this needs to be law. This is the way to get it back, because I'm planning on having seminars. I'm going to have seminars to help people learn what the laws are before they go to the courts, because when they go to the courts and they're armed with that, the courts aren't going to know what to do. Okay, I've already told you about my four rounds with the judge and the sheriff and everything at court, all that crap, but I was pulled over the other day for a license plate light out. And I seen him parked there, and they wait for people, and he's driving behind me, driving next to me, and driving behind me, pulls me over. And I have my worker with me, and he comes up to the car. I said, well, I pulled you over because your license plate light's out. I said, okay, thank you. Either give me a citation or warn me or whatever,
Right.
And that's it. But he's like, well, why do you got five cell phones in the car? I said, that's personal. He said, what? I said, that's personal. It's my personal business. My guy has two cell phones. He got a new one. I got three. None of his business, really, why I have a cell phone.
Right.
And my guy hurt his back, so he has a prescription, a doctor prescription. He said, well, why do you have a prescription? What's in that? Do you have a prescription for it? I don't know. Doesn't that violate HIPAA laws? Because he said, let me see that. I don't know. Then my guy says, well, he has probable cause. He has probable cause for what? Pulling me over with a light out? They give me a ticket. He did have probable cause to ask about cell phones or go through the car or this or that, So, he didn't end up giving me a ticket, because I told him, I said, buddy, I took the same oath you took, and I said, I don't violate people's rights, and I'm just letting you know that, and I asked his badge and all that stuff, and I, told him I went to court already with the Wilkes-Barre cops and everything, and I beat him in court, too, because I violated due process. So,
well, I'm going to tell you, in my experience, and I mean, not that I have a whole bunch of experience, but I'm on the internet every day looking at this stuff. I read every little piece of thing that comes through. I get a lot of information. And I got a lot of people that I talk to and I follow, and I get my information out there,
Right.
So I got a good resource. And it's, so far, anybody that has resisted and took it to court, even with these rotten, evil courts that they got today, seems to me that these judges are not willing to stick their neck out to uphold these edicts. And they,
oh, they're not, no.
That barber that they closed up and took his license and everything, guess what? He won. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He won, and a lot of other people have won that take it to court. See, they just think nobody's going to take it to court. They figure you're going to go in, they're going to get $1,000 fine or whatever it is. And then you're going to plea it, and you're going to pay something, and you're going to be a good little slave, and you're going
to
go home.
Well, most people do that. But I should have listened to your advice with the jurisdiction when I was fighting with the judge on that thing, because I didn't challenge the jurisdiction. And in the end, she made me get a lawyer, which I think violated my right to represent myself.
Right.
Okay, the lawyer lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him two times to do something for me. He didn't. So I'm going to, it was misrepresentation. So I'm going to include him now. I'm going to get her off the bench. I'm still working on this. But at any rate, I mean, that is what it is.
You've got to pick your battles, too, because there's so much crap going on. You can be in court from now till the cows come home,
Absolutely. Yeah, but I want to ask you an important thing. A friend of mine has a club, okay? He has a club in Pennsylvania. They close the bars now. So now the rule is they have to serve food, and he does have a restaurant license, a food license, and all that. So it's crazy because he's serving hot dogs and just to be a compliance to be open,
right?
So anyway, they say a seven citation, seven hearing coming up, seven hearings, because they're harassing. State police keep coming in there and citing him for stupid stuff, okay? And I said, listen, you got to join the NLA. You got to learn about the law. You got to stand up for this. I'm trying to tell him this, right? Now, it's different. He's an establishment. He's not a private person. This is a business. But
we're taking affidavits from business owners. This is where this is where you need the sheriff to be on board. Pennsylvania still has sheriffs there, right?
Yes. And I'm actually running for sheriff. I'm going to be running for sheriff. Yes, I am.
I rest my case right there. That's what you need to do. We need constitutional sheriffs. Many sheriffs.
Well, I'm a constitutional common law constable right now.
There you go.
And that's what I tell the cops when they pull me over. I tell them that they're just like, what? They go and check and everything. But this is what I need to know. This guy, I'm trying to help him with his business. Okay. They cited him because people leave at night, at the end of the night, and they're loud in the parking lot. And somebody complains, there's only one house in the whole area. So they come there and they give him a citation. I said, well, when they come, is anybody in the parking lot? He says, no. I said, well, doesn't somebody have to be there? Are they just citing you for hearsay?
here's the thing. If they're saying somebody's loud in the parking lot, they got to have more proof than just that. In other
right.
words,
but what I told them to do is I told them to put up no loitering signs. I told that a person that has a house there, we believe, is the one that complains about it. They have a house near there. But you know what? They bought the house, or they moved in the house right near a club. You know what I mean? So, I mean, they got to think of that. But then, so they say that people are making noise in the parking lot. He tries to get them out. He has security. I'm security. I actually have some of my people that work that are security for him. You go, you tell them to leave the parking lot. What are you going to do? You practically have to beat them up to leave because they don't want to leave. You know, they stay there. They play their music loud. You tell them to turn it down. You know, so he's doing what he's not. They cite him saying he maliciously lets people make noise in the parking lot.
It's not up to him. They got to go after the people making the noise.
That's what I'm saying. So I had him put up no loitering signs to cover himself.
That's all.
And then I said, listen, you got to fight this in court. He said, I can't do that. I said, why can't you do that? And he looks. He gives me his hand. He's black. I said, no. I don't want to hear that. I said, you got to stand up for yourself. You know, you got
to
learn
this. That's more of a reason. I'm surprised he's not saying that they're discriminating against him. You're doing this because
he did talk about wanting to go to the, NAACP or whatever, in Wilkes-Barre.
That's right.
He talked about going there, but I told him, you got to stand up.
That's really not what it's about, but guess what? They're taking a chance of having that come up. Bothering him.
Well, they are taking a chance because they keep citing him. And then I heard them tell her, or tell his wife who manages it. They cited her, too, on things. And then I heard them tell her in the hallway, well, you need to have your security in your parking lot to keep the parking lot clear. Wait a minute. The security was hired for the people inside, really. You know, they check people for guns, weapons, this, that, the other thing. They're there also to protect the people inside. And I said, that guy just gave you legal advice. I don't think he could do that. To me, that's legal advice. You know?
They can't be citing him for the people in the parking lot. They need to go, you know.
So what does he do about that? Because he's got a court hearing. He's got like seven tickets and citations.
This is not my ticket. I'm not responsible for them. You don't have jurisdiction over this.
Even though they're on his lot? I mean, they left the place, so that's why it's all put no loitering in the lot.
It's a public place, though. He can't control what they do when they're outside.
Right. Listen, I told him, when you go into the magistrates, you tell them you can't control your parking lot no more than he can control his parking lot there.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Look, it's so stupid. First of all, sometimes you got to fight fire with fire. I mean, I don't give me ideas because I'll tell you things. I would be going to certain public officials and I'd be making noise in their parking lots. They got a hotline number. I'd be calling up on them, making reports that they're not wearing a mask. I'd drive them crazy.
Right. Whatever. Well, you know, the cop that pulled me over was 3 feet away from me. He wasn't wearing a mask, and I shook his hand at the end.
Yeah.
At the end, they said, you know, okay, I understand. You're just doing your job. I said, they shook his hand, and I was like, he's okay, and I'm going.
Yeah, so what are you gonna do? Crazy days we live in. But we do have to start thinking about, you know, proper ways of resisting. I'm not saying start a fight, but there's got to be consequences here and there, and people got to understand that this is a violation of liberty.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question. Could he serve them when they come to his door with a cease and desist for harassment or stalking or anything?
What do you mean, the police?
Once they police come, could he serve them with a notice?
He could. I don't see why he couldn't. You know?
Because that's really what they're doing. I mean, they're trying to shut him down, you know, is what they're trying to do.
Right. Well,
he even told the cop told the manager, she said, I know, you're trying to shut me down. He's saying, the cop says, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, well, I would if I would make sure I recorded everything because major lawsuit. Now I don't know what kind of sheriff he has, but what I would do is the state police came, I would call the sheriff.
Yeah, state police. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because the state police, they don't have jurisdiction. They're just the governor's police force. The constitutional cop is the sheriff, and the sheriff
Absolutely.
Can tell them to get out of here. And they'd have to go, whether they like it or not. That's why it's important to have a good sheriff. You become sheriff, you go over there and you say, listen, get out of here. You don't have any, you didn't ask me if you could be here, and this is a...
Well, I know the sheriff. Yeah, I know the sheriff, and I'm on him about violating people's Second Amendment rights. That's the one thing with the sheriff. I talked to him, I was at his meetings, I was at his seminars. you know, and I talked to them about that, because they tend to teach people all about the castle doctrine and all that law here, you know, but they don't tell them really what their Second Amendment rights are. And I've been at a seminar after you talked to a whole room full of people. I went up front and I said, excuse me, Brian, I said, what you just told these people tonight, is that Second Amendment? Is that their Second Amendment rights, or is that the statutory laws? And he said, yeah, it is. And I said, exactly. What you're telling them may not be 100% right.
Right.
He didn't like that, but it's okay.
Yeah.
But,
well,
I could talk to him about that.
Yeah.
All right. And I do want to get involved, so I'll talk to Jan. I'll give Jan a call.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Yeah. I got... looks like Jim from Pennsylvania. We got another Pennsylvanian. It's
so George.
Keystone State. Yeah, what's up?
Okay, two comments. Let me try to get these through. The first one is we had Brent talk about going into court, and there's the process and the result. And, you know, the result is not always the lawful one or the correct one or the common law result.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I think that's what we have to deal with, and there is no other arbitrators to go to. We have, I'm being kind, it's a de facto government we have, de facto judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go into court, I think at this point we have to follow the right process, and results are God.
And everybody that's done that has prevailed in as far as I know. Look, I don't know everybody, but there's quite a few cases that have prevailed by doing exactly what you said, pushing the thing through the courts, exercising their due process, and some of these judges are getting a little worried because they know the people are starting to get upset, and they're actually handing down good decisions. Plus, you know, you could take it to a jury trial, too. I mean, and that's getting to be a better deal because I think everybody's sick of this garbage, you know what I mean? So if you got a jury of your peers, you'd probably prevail there, too. I mean, you could decide to let the judge try it, and what I would do is I would see how he reacts as far as whether he's friendly to me or not. To let him make a decision or not, you know. But if it looks like he's being adversarial, I wouldn't let him make the decision. I would make sure that it went to a jury of my peers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is, right now I wouldn't feel comfortable going into court. You know, the way it's de facto. It's just not the way
right.
they're supposed to do it with the common law.
Right.
But I think that would make our people feel a little bit better knowing that we win, we do the right thing, and the results are up to God. I think that's important.
You mean for us to run like a common law case through there?
Yes.
Yeah, people got to learn how to write that. We couldn't possibly run everybody's case through there, but maybe the bigger ones, something that maybe we want to make an example out of. But look at... if you look at any of the papers we draw up, we always do, we always rebut the presumption that we're in that corporation. And if they either get it or they don't get it, it doesn't matter. The fact is, it's there, it's on the record, you know. So that's what you got to do when you go to court. You have to make sure that you're in a common law court and that you are rebutting that presumption. And like I said, even these crazy judges at this point here are finding for the people. So I wouldn't be afraid to let a judge make the decision if I put a good case in and I could, you know, and I was able to expound upon it in that. And you got to be careful, but you know, a lot of times we'll take a case into the lower courts. And then because you get like three cracks at it before you end up in a federal court. So you take your chances in the lower courts, you know what I mean? And then you get like two or three chances there, and then you can bring it to federal court for the... They always violate due process, always, right? It's a guarantee that you get... If you don't prevail in the lower court, you can always appeal at least the due process violations that they're going to do to you in the lower court. So, but there is a chance, albeit however slim as it may be, that you could win in the lower courts. And I think it's going to get easier to win in the lower courts as time goes on, because I think some of these judges are sick of this crap, too, to be honest with you. You know?
My point is, I think we need to have more confidence when we go into court than maybe I have presumed to have.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me make the other comment, Gerard. I'm just so disturbed about all these governors and mayors that are making these directives to wear the mask and all that, and all these comments that they're making are just... I just get so upset with them that I want to do something. So what I've been doing is I just send them a postcard, and I ask for their oaths of office. Now, I haven't gotten any responses yet. Not a single one has returned
a
copy of their oath of office.
And you won't. No.
And but this is a follow-up to that. You know, I sent it to that that mayor in D.C. I think it's Murphy or somebody, anyways. And I requested the oath of office. Now, is she they not a mayor of a warehouse with the mayor of Washington, D.C.? If you follow Article 1, Section 8, where that 10-mile square will be for erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So if you're residing in Washington, D.C., are you living in a warehouse? That's my you know, I've always thought that's where you're in a warehouse if you're living in D.C. At one point I saw D.C. license plate saying they didn't have, they had taxation without representation. But they live in a warehouse is what my understanding is. Is that, can you give me some feedback on that?
Well, if you're in D.C., that you're definitely in a different, you know, area. You're in a territory. They do things. It's a different world, you know what I mean? But they're still supposed to be under the Constitution, per se. But, you know, again, it's like you're saying, you're in their area. You're in their... They have the ability to make certain rules for themselves in that area. So, you know...
The point I'm making is, I didn't think the 10-mile square was supposed to be used for residents.
No, that's right. I don't know. I don't know that much about as far as if you're in there. I guess if you got a residence in there, then you're under like you said, you're in their warehouse.
That's what I call it. Living in a warehouse.
You're in area something on shelf something. You belong to the federal government, I guess. You
know, that's what I always thought. You're living in a warehouse.
Yeah,
now listen,
I just wanted to call in.
I'm
not that versed in the law to really expand upon that, but I understand what you're saying. If you're trying to put a little bit of common sense to something, like if one and one is, you know, equals two, right? So
I just don't think it was meant for residents, that's all.
Right, right. So
okay, that's all I have. Keep up the good work, guys.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jim.
Bye.
Okay, Dan. Next from Carolina. Dan, I'm opening you up. There you go. You're open, Dan. What's up?
I appreciate that, and I want to compliment the young lady that really gave us tremendous insight, and she was given the, I guess, the wherewithals of, if I can use that word, of in support of arbitration. I hope Mr. Brent's still on, and for what I have possibly sent in the last reasonable hours, trying to get you guys to get a little understanding there, an email. Have you had the opportunity yet? I know Mr. John DeRash and Jan and various others probably have. Maybe could answer that question. Have you seen the documents that I've sent in?
No, did you send them to me in my email? Where'd you send them?
I actually did a combination. Your email, no question, shows that we sent about everything. Mr. John, in a collective fashion, we sent it, Mr. John DeRash and Jan, and I believe even we included Carl. I know he's...
At NLA, is that what you did? At NLA?
Yeah, and Now, what there's a couple of emails. One is showing a actual case that my brother that we alluded to the other night has, or at least his wife and him are on the caption of the case. I find that very strange when, in fact, sadly, I've reported for the last 2 years he's supposed to be under dementia. And I don't know how that an attorney, and I'll just go ahead and say it, out of Wilmington, North Carolina, and a U.S. bankruptcy court over there, I can see how that could happen in Wilmington, might move forward. And without my brother having a competency hearing, and because clearly I don't believe he, even though he's on the caption of the case, I don't think he's going to be able to testify.
And that's because these attorneys don't care, and he doesn't think that you'll bring it up, or he doesn't think that he's going to have to answer it. And
I got you.
And who knows?
That sounds reasonable.
Maybe when you protest, they go, oh, okay, so we'll do it. You know what I'm saying? He's putting another stumbling block in your way, I think. You know, I mean,
well,
your brother might not have even done it. He might have said, let's put him in there, because you don't know what his strategy is.
Well, he's had a history of using the courts, and you've already heard this, and I'm not going to go in this lengthy. You've heard it before, where I had to come to the tune of, almost $35,000. Actually, I was put under stress, duress, and coercion there of in that particular case. And if you recall, this is where he was coming after the homestead and thought he was going to steal this homestead through a tax foreclosure sale that he orchestrated. And clearly, he should have never been able to got on the stand to start with, because he was not at the will. He was actually not pertinent to what the case was concerning, and he got caught. Actually, this is where he got caught, as it turns out, where he had done up the fabricated a POA on my mother, who had dementia, and he knew full well of this. Well, let me sort of move away from there, back to the young lady.
Well, wait a minute.
And
real quick, you should give him a warning. You should do an affidavit or something, and tell him, look, my brother's not even fit to stand trial, and you know, and make him publicly aware of it. So at the end of the day, you can sue him for it. He can't say I didn't know. That's my advice anyway. All right.
At the same juncture, that's a good idea. At the same juncture. I've been, of course, studying, and I saw a particular case, and I sent you guys a copy of it, and this seems to stand out like in the register concerning the bankruptcy, a particular case. And it mentions all the way through that this particular litigant, not to be lengthy, was making motions in there and putting evidence in the case throughout. About 28 pages long, but I'll tell you, it's well worth you guys scanning. And it's a U.S. Bankruptcy case there, and the part is, the thrux is, this litigant all the way through in the claims is saying and bringing out all kind of meritorious lines of defense as to that the particular claim is non-dismissal, that it cannot be discharged, in other words. Non-dischargeable is the better word. I stand to be corrected there, a little better word. And I can sure tell you my claims are such that the way they have been, and they're still predicated on the fact of a court with documents that are ongoing between my brother and I, that needs to be further perfected with just a simple measure, and that is where there was a, it's documented at this very hour right now for several years, really, that a one-page document, and this won't begin to completely settle things, but it's a start, and it's a one-page document. It's between Brother Doug and myself, and it's totally documented in two counties, and there's been some hearing already in my mother's estate in both of these counties, and he's never shown up, nor any other parties there in regard some of the things that he's tried to pull with some fraudulent deeds, by the way, there, and there's five of them, and I'm not going to go into that because you've heard that before, but anyway, we certainly had a meeting about almost 2 hours recently with a county manager, as I reported last time, and we've discussed a lot of this. Now, our next meeting is to alert the county manager with the documents to be sent. I guess I'm going to send them PDF format over, and to be parallel with our two-hour meeting. It was almost a two-hour meeting, as I was telling you last Monday night. And then, at the same token, these documents will serve as prima facie evidences as to why that our claims should be valid, and that in some cases, even though we've not quite got, I was alluding to this just a minute ago, what you call a default judgment. Clearly, we're in line for a default judgment. That's the little tiny point I wanted to make a while ago, and there's other situations where that this probate hearings that I've already mentioned just a few minutes ago have been ongoing for over the years, and they should take a precedence over the last maybe 10 days. I think it was July the 21st, something like that, is the day that apparently they started this case and filed in Eastern North Carolina, which is Wilmington, in the bankruptcy proceedings, and noticed me. So you guys have a copy of that, of course. But yet, I'm just, after saying this and what the young lady said, I think there needs to be an attorney or some helper somehow or another putting a stay on what they're doing, because with that court, because the millions and millions of dollars of assets that you've heard me speak of before are clearly not his, but yet he's relying on this little peon attorney, I hate to say that, over there to run him through, and he never pay and do justice to after he's stolen all his own mother's funds, his father's funds, my inheritance, and it's way, way worse than that. He's even defrauded the state of North Carolina and federal government. It's a string of stuff.
Let me stop you for a minute. Are you thinking that if you turn this thing into an arbitrator, that you would be better off because he'll be a neutral, he'll be a company that has to do a good job, and it's gonna remove it from, who knows if there's collusion with the judges or with anything else in there. So are you saying that if you think that it would be a good idea to switch this to arbitration, which it might be, if that's what you're thinking?
That was where I was leading up. Boy, you are just unbelievably right on the punchline, and that was what was going to be my question
I would say do it, because look, if you've been there that long and you got all this document and this evidence, bringing a fresh pair of eyes in, I mean, and the thing is you got to pick careful, because look, at the corruption today is so deep you can't even believe it. It goes all the way from the top all the way to the bottom people. I can't believe how good they've been at putting subversive people in places so that they can control right down at the county and town level. You have to be real careful, you know what I mean? So if you're going to get an arbitrator, you're going to want to make sure that it's somebody that's not connected with any of these people at all.
Absolutely. That would have to be in law. I want you, I'm just blown away with what you're saying here. And I want to, for the benefit of the audience and especially for you and right on the rest of the and the individuals there with National Liberty Alliance, right on to Mr. Brent, because he got a copy too. I'm sure we'll get tremendous encore of what you just said and be very supportive, especially when you hear this. Where I've already alluded to the fact that, well, even my brother did not come to the probate of my mother's will. He clearly, of course, I must say, was not in the will, and there's reasons why, and I've stated that before. But nevertheless, the truth of the matter is multiple cases were such that we knew that it was important in both counties, New Hanover County and Brunswick County, to notice my brother with this one-page document, which would be a tremendous blessing. In other words, 100% of nothing is 100% of nothing. It's zero. But with this document, we're talking about tremendous amounts of real estate, highway frontage properties, island properties. I mean, we could go on. And then also other assets that belong to my parents in this one page is definitely went through mediation with an individual. And my brother responded late and never did respond any further other than at my mother's funeral. And the congregation is about 100, 200 people, at least about 150, 200 people were there, and what he responded. So as far as the various cases that are ongoing, they set a precedence and have been filed way back in time, but yet this they're like in continuance because they're not completely settled, and I'm the executor. And so that's why of my mother's estate, and actually we inherit my father's estate in closing here because we've got some other guests here, is that I've actually done the research and was forced to because the vast amount of wealth was never returned or get granted over in my father's probate that I didn't even know was going on. And Douglas, my brother, filed 16 pages of pure garbage. And so what I'm trying to say is I've sent y'all a little bit of message, too, that this should be the bankruptcy court should, with the right kind of representation, entertain a stay for fraud, but entertain a stay for determining vast amounts of different claims and wealth that's got to be addressed that belongs to my parents' estate, both of them, not just my mother, but my father's estate, too. And there's claims with the federal government, such in the state of North Carolina, where my mother was placed in a nursing home. Well, and there's some situations there's got to be dealt with.
I don't know what's worse, you know. The bankruptcy, I hear so many horrible stories about bankruptcy courts, just as much as I do about, the family courts, the bankruptcy courts. The long and the short of it is, you know, when the sharks smell blood in the water, that, you know, they go into a feeding frenzy, and that's what you're up against.
Right.
First thing they look at is how much land. What are we talking about? And I look at this case, goes, it's all convoluted and big, and I think an arbitrator is a good idea because you get a fresh set of eyes. Plus, they're glossing things over. And when he doesn't show up, how come they're not holding him in contempt? How come he's not defaulted and kicked out of the case at that point? You know what I mean? And so there's got to be paperwork you can send him and send those guys that say, look at. You know, you should be able to push them out for good with the right piece of paper if you can get somebody to actually act on it. And that's why I think, you know, if you have...
I will say this. In previous, it's been maybe 6 or 8 months back that I even mentioned, and I researched to the Hilton, and I'm trying to keep this very brief, to respect other people here. We're at 11:52 p.m., by the way. And so Mr. Gerard and Brent and any others that Mr. John, if he's on duty tonight, or Jan's possibly, I had brought this up to other meetings with on Monday night and in the past as to what would be a receivership. If it came down to it, the truth of the matter is, with proper affidavits, and I'm pretty close to finalizing, affidavit, or more than one, I've got to take something to drink, that, and then I have already perfected waiting at least 6, you'll see these guys, you'll see this documents, they're typed up, and they each have tremendous merit, and on the face of them, every one of them says preliminary resolution document 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or more, and it's got unbelievable data inside there, and it's talking about inventory and all of this, and this has already been reported and is waiting to be dealt with in the probate that's ongoing. And I have to be truthful with this, even with my brother right down to the penny in every way, because the truth of the matter is I'm a fiduciary, and it's just a situation where, to some degree, when I put my hand and affirm anything, even with the federal government that would be needing a certain check cut to them or the state of North Carolina, none of this has ever happened, because there's not been anyone just in my father's estate, and my mother's estate's open. So I hope you kind of get a drift here.
I do, and I'll look at it, but I'm going to tell you right now what I tell a lot of other people. I'll look at it and see if anything jumps out. But like with me, this is way above my pay grade, but it doesn't mean that I can't give you something that won't jump out that I could see that maybe somebody else didn't see. That's certainly worth me looking at it. But I'll tell you, I just know enough to make me dangerous. That's all I can tell you. You know, but that could be I'm not making any promises, because this is a look at, you're talking probate and bankruptcy and all that. I mean, I'm no lawyer, and nor do I want to be, but I'll tell you, I'll read it and see what I can come up with. But
yeah. All right, and by the way, I must give you a little hint. This is a help. Or at least his wife has got him on the caption, and I don't think he's confident at all. And by the way, she's got power of attorney over him, and I've read everything on it. I don't believe he can even be allowed or permitted to testify.
That's kind of the stuff that could jump out at me, you know what I mean? But I'll look at it and see. But look, I got to go. We got one other guy, and we're running out of time here.
One second, and that is, it's a Chapter 13, which that's a lot better than if it be a 7.
Right. I think 13 is reorganizational, right?
Let's go to the other individual. I think you've got a hold on it. You're going to see some evidence of the information anyway to the emails.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, and that brings us to Brian from,
Hello,
574.
Can you hear me?
I can. Where are you calling from? What
state? This is Brian out of Indiana.
Okay.
Couple points. Mm-hmm. You guys haven't mentioned the material of a man named Carl Lentz. Are you aware of him?
Early on, I was studying Carl Lentz. We used some of his. I had a buddy that was into him heavily. I liked a lot of his stuff, Carl Lentz. It's been a while since read anything, but go ahead. What do you got to say about it?
No, it was just bringing your attention. That's who.
You know, I haven't looked at Carl Lentz's stuff. I mean, I'll tell you, when I was looking at Carl Lentz, it was probably 3-4 years ago. And He's got a certain way about him. And I like some of his stuff. Don't get me, you know what I mean?
Well, strategy with him is, Carl Lentz's strategy is used for defense,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Mm-hmm.
Personal defense when they come against me.
Right.
But I'm getting ready to go after people that are U.S. citizens.
Right.
And so I'll take a statutory approach on that stuff, specifically and just in passing. I'm an over-the-road truck driver,
mm-hmm.
and they 1099'd me, which is the foundational instrument for the IRS to move against me.
Exactly.
They're not moving against me. Haven't talked to me in 25 years.
Right.
But Indiana Department of Revenue is coming after me.
That's
right?
Unusual, and I'm going to tell you why. I mean, like
sure.
I said, I know just enough to make me dangerous. Usually, the state will not move if they don't have a federal return or whatever. You know what I mean? They predicate it on the federal. Then the
I haven't filed in 25 years.
Right. So it's to me, it's very unusual that they would be coming after you. Now, when you say the Department of Revenue, that's the state income tax, right?
Correct.
See, they don't use if there's no federal income tax, because if you read their laws, and I don't pretend to know Indiana's laws. I know more about New York because I've been in New York most of
right.
my life.
Yeah.
They don't really have anything to base. See, you have to have a federal income tax on file for them to have a foothold on you. So one depends
they're
on the other.
They're claiming I have to clear it with the Social Security. That's what they're using. Somehow there's a record through Social Security. Well, they know where I'm at.
Like,
I use the.
I understand
go
that,
ahead.
But they still need your W-2, W-9, whatever on the federal, in order to
1099.
So you got the trucking company gave you a 1099.
Yeah, I'm an owner operator.
Okay, so that 1099 would be for the federal income. What's the state? The state uses the same form, the same time. Well, it is the same thing, isn't it?
Correct.
Basically, they're going to go from the bottom line of the federal. But you didn't file a federal income tax return. But yet there's a 1099 on you, right?
Correct.
And well, there's a problem with that. And they do have a foothold on you with that because. There was a record sent to the IRS that you made this money that was taxable money. And what you're supposed to do with them...
Yeah,
is,
I'm listening.
Is, you're supposed to correct that and say, this is a false information report. This is not taxable money or whatever. What's his name? The one that Cracking the Code used to do. And they really... Look, they went after him because his stuff was working so well because he was right. You know?
Oh, they killed him in
Texas
prison.
What the heck was that guy's name that wrote the Cracking the Code?
Erwin Schiff.
Not Erwin Schiff. No. Maybe I'm wrong. I know Erwin Schiff, but there's another guy. They put him and his wife in jail. But they didn't get him really for what he was doing. People were getting checks back from him, you know. And his thing was, when a company sends a W-2 or 1099, you have to correct it and say this is a false information
mm-hmm.
report. Because basically what
you're
doing is...
Well, I've never made any income. There's a Supreme Court case that says an individual, only a corporation can make income.
Well,
I'm not
a gotta
corporation.
Stick by that.
I'm a man.
I understand that. But when you let a 1099 lay there, what the 1099 is saying is you made income. And what they're
right.
saying is if you don't rebut it, as far as they're concerned, then you did, because under law, silence is acquiescence.
Right.
So, as far as they're
well,
concerned.
Well, that's what I'm moving on now.
Hmm?
The company fired me June 23rd.
Okay.
Because I pointed out to them a couple months before that. That you know, you have violated the law, and I'm going to put your accounting lady in prison for 5 years if you don't correct it to zero. I says, I'll give you a receipt to set your... Because if they zero out my 1099s, they've got unaccounted for income.
Right.
Right, the corporation.
Right.
So I said, I'll give you signed affidavits that I did receive And here's the key phrase. We had a fair market exchange.
Right.
My equipment and my labor for the currency that you gave me, it was not income, it was a fair market exchange. And if you don't zero these out, there's an amended 1099 form, I forget who it is, but on that material, I'm using SEDM. You're familiar with them?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, they're, excuse the phrase, I know you guys are slightly, but they're militant Bible thumpers. Militant. Deeply religious, deeply well-read in the Bible, and well-read in all of the law. And they have actually step-by-step templates. There are hundreds of documents, hundreds of pages each, in how to do it. If you're a U.S. citizen, they won't even talk to you.
Right.
You've got to... Another point.
I got a note here. Let me just read it real quick, well, because it says, this caller should ask the Illinois Department of Revenue if they will state the validity of their account under penalty of perjury.
That correct. Good point.
Said, you know, so
thank you, whoever said that.
I have said thanks to Terry, but I had to read it because I forget. We're running out of time, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead.
All right, and the other point I want to make is, since I am gainfully unemployed, this was part of my plan, although it happened too soon. Now I'm refusing to work again. And I want to start spearheading things in Indiana. How do I get connected up?
Well, you know how to go on the site and look up who's in Indiana. If you have any problems, give Jan a call or Jim. And
where do I find their number?
Well, if you go on the site under the contact, everybody's listed there. There's a contact for everybody.
Okay.
Maybe even sign up to be take a position as a grand jury administrator.
Also, I wanted to mention one last thing, and then I'll get the hell off your line.
Mm-hmm, that's fine. Relax.
You're aware
you're the last
of
guy anyway.
You're aware of the 180,000 sealed indictments.
I am.
All right. Well, I don't know how many 160.
Well, I've heard.
But
180
when,
the other day.
When they are executed, there will be many, many, many open government positions. If we do not, we, National Liberty Alliance and good people, if we don't step up, the second-tier criminals that weren't good enough to get elected are going to step up and fill those positions, and we're going to be in as bad a shape as we are now.
Or worse.
If we do not step up, and I mean now, we're running out of time.
Yeah,
we've been
talking about this because what's going to happen is there's going to be a vacuum, and it's going
to suck
all
we have to be on our toes, ready for the firing gun in the block,
and I'm ready
to go.
I'm not sure we're ready. I'm not sure that we're going to, you know, that we'll do it anyway. But you know, it's up to God.
No excuses will be accepted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We got to be ready.
No, I know. I know. Believe me.
Also, I'm heading to North Dakota for, I guess you'd call it militia commander training.
Mm-hmm. Well,
this is the backup plan.
Right. Well, hopefully we don't have to go there, but I understand. And we're closer now than we've ever been, but like I said, I don't want to go there. I don't want to even discuss that because that's a scary thing because, you know, once you lose liberty, you never get it back to where it was. It's just not going to be the same, you know what I mean?
We've already lost our liberty.
I know we have, but at least you and I have grown up in an era where we remember what it feels like. We got the best chance of getting it back the way it used to be than anybody else. When you're gone and I'm gone, forget about it because...
Not just you and me. We have Trump at the helm.
Right.
He's doing more. But if we don't step up and fill those positions when they become vacant...
He brought the top down. We got to bring the bottom up. That's the long and the short of it. And if we don't step in, you're absolutely right. It's going to be hell to pay.
I was in Vietnam in 1970. I know how to play these games.
Right.
But
I
have a nightmare, and here's what it is. If we begin shooting at each other, look around you. It'll be 200 years before we live like this. We'll go back to the 1850s.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So, thank you for taking my call.
No,
I hope
problem.
That my comments
you.
Were useful.
Yeah, no, and they
pleasure.
Are. And we'll talk to you again next week or something. But
no, you're going to hear a lot of me now that I am a man of leisure.
You all had to break my
all right.
I had to break my back.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye. When with that, we're going to be all done. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. And make sure you're in prayer for the nation and the president and all of us at National Liberty Alliance because, you know, at this point here, I think fasting and prayer is where we need to be because, like he says, we're very, very close to a very critical point. And, you know, it's up to us to really fill those shoes. And, you know, I learned stuff on the run, on the fly, faking it until you're making it type thing. And like Brent says, they don't teach this stuff. So the thing you got to do is just get in there and do it. Don't be afraid that you can't do it because you're never going to know how to do it, really, until you do it. And that's the teacher. Doing it is actually the teacher. So just jump in and do it, and you'll figure it out. Believe me, you'll figure it out. And especially if you're doing God's plan and doing his process, and he's going to take care of the results, like Brent says. And so you can't be afraid to step up to the plate and step into that. That's why you need to take these positions, and you need to go with them. We're ready. We're ready now. This is it. We have to be ready, ready or not. So I'm going to let everybody go, and thank you very much, and we'll see you here. Same time, same station next week. God bless everybody.